This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Once upon a time, two men decided if they were making the cut. Then they made the cut. And now JT and Aaron are talking everything from wrestling to pop culture and beyond. Because it's no holds barred.
Hi, Place to Be Nation. JT here with episode number 4 of the No Holds Barred podcast. Joining me, as always, is my partner on the show, and that is the man from the Great Way North. That is Mr. Aaron George. Aaron, how are you?
What's up, big man?
Is that a Mean Gene thing?
No, I think I was going more for a Ric Flair. Well, Sid would have been more like, Sah! You fat, bald-headed little oaf!
You bogus son of a bitch!
The best part about that is when he, in the Jack Tunney bit, when he talks with his mouth, his teeth closed, the most bogus act you ever pulled off.
You know, I'm fucking angry.
Oh, he's going to kill someone. I love Sid. We're not talking about Sid tonight.
No, we're not. You have to calm down. This is the No Holds Barred podcast. Like I said, it is our fourth one. And here on the show, Aaron, we go through a whole bunch of different things. We do our pre-match promo where we talk about our No Holds Barred moments of the day. We do three falls, usually a pair of wrestling ones and then a pop culture. And then we do a sudden death top five to close things out before capping it all off with a post-match celebration of a recent moment of joy in our lives. So that's a quick reminder of the layout of this show. Mm-hmm. And normally, what we've been doing for the first fall is something very standardized. But before we get to that, Aaron, I want to know, did you have any no-holes-barred moment? We usually call it off the day, but, you know, well, let's call it like the last like week or so since we recorded. Do you have any of those?
Yeah, I got one. So as you know, I probably have some trouble with road rage. I think I've described this a couple times in the past, and everything in my city, which is Montreal, is shut down. So this was last week, probably towards the end of the week. I was stuck at this place where, you know, like there's construction everywhere and everything's kind of whittled down to one lane. It's a four-way intersection. Mm-hmm. And so it's taking forever for people to turn left, and I'm in the left turning lane. And it's taking forever. And finally, there's this person in front of me. There's like a good amount of time for them to go. There's a good amount of space, and they don't go, right? And I've already been in this line like for realistically about 5-6 minutes, which at a four-way stop is way too long, right? So I give a little honk, a little beep beep, like not a lean.
It's not aggressive. It's not aggressive.
No, beep beep. And she starts doing all these gestures out her window. Like really angry, right? And I went out the window and I said, well, you had space. Because she had lots of space.
Right.
And she just starts screaming. She didn't like this. So she starts screaming. Now what she's saying is, learn how to drive. That's what she's yelling at me. And my instinct would be to yell back, but this time I went for a different tactic. The first thing she yelled was, learn how to drive. And instead of yelling back, I said, what? Then, she went up a notch. Learn how to drive! And again, I can't hear you! Now, she was determined because she said it again. Learn how to drive! And I go, I can't hear you! At this point, she got out of the car, didn't walk backwards, but like fuming angry and just screamed as loud as she could. She clenched both her fists and yelled, Learn how to drive!
I don't know how you find these situations, but go ahead.
And she just and when she finally said the last learn how to drive, I went, huh? and then she kind of just looked at me, and then the other cars behind were honking, so now she was the bad guy.
Right.
She had missed another one. And the guy next to me gave me the look like, is this what's wrong with this woman? Anyway, that was mine.
You should have given her the clenched teeth, the Sid.
That not turning was the most bogus act.
Well, keep that in the holster for next time.
Bogus!
Oh, God. So yesterday morning, I had like – this is like super rough morning. Just like trying to get out of the house. We were trying to get to the gym, and then I had to get to the tire place because over the weekend, actually last Friday, we went to my daughter's. She did like a dance camp for the week, and she had a little show on Friday morning.
Nice. How'd she do?
Oh, she did great. She's really good at dance, and she loves it. So we're going, but of course we're rushing because, as always, it's not me, Aaron, but we're always fucking late, right? So
I know. I understand your pain on that one.
We're rushing, of course, and I'm going to park, and I pull in this driveway. And I'm going to go further down the street to park. And my wife's like, here, just pull in this driveway and turn and park here. So I'm like, all right, fine. So as I'm doing that, I clip like a raised storm drain, and just my tire just blows out on impact. I mean, just like someone has ripped a bullet through it. So now I got this flat fucking tire on my Jeep. And like, we have like expensive fucking tires for whatever reason on the car we have that is expensive. So I'm all pissed, right? So now I'm on the phone fucking AAA. It's hot as hell. I got a party with like 70 people coming the next day that I got to get home and fucking set up for. I got Criscolo on the way. So like all this shit I got to deal with. Now I got to sit around after the show and wait for AAA to come. So they come and I call the tire place and like, we have a special order of the tire, of course. So I couldn't go till yesterday to the tire place. So we go to the gym in the morning and we had taken two cars because my thought was we go to the gym, I'll drop the car off, my wife will follow me and, you know, then we'll do some errands and get lunch with the other car. And like, it was all probably just like too much. Like that party we have is like a lot, especially for like us and the kids. And then Sunday was like a lot. So like, we're all on edge as it is. So the kids are like super like just on edge. They're fired up. They're angsty. So like, getting out of the house is a bitch in the morning. I drop my phone and crack my screen protector, thankfully, not my screen. So now I got to go to the fucking AT&T. So we get to the gym, and I park, and my wife comes in like a second behind me, and I'm like, here, just park here. And she was trying to make it to like a class. So it was like the lot was mobbed. The gym was like kind of busy, but this camp. So like, just there's a million fucking cars. And like, there's literally like the only spot left is this spot. So of course, the car next to it parked like a cunt bag piece of shit and is like over the fucking line. So I am so angry by now. Like, it was a bitch getting out of the house. My phone protector broke. Like, I got to go shell out, you know, whatever, however much for this tire and deal with that shit. And now I got both kids. I got to park this car and then like go in and work out. And so I just say, fuck it. And I pull in like basically right on their ass. Like, I mean, just like, almost like right up against them. And I have to, my other car is on the other side of me. And I'm like, so everything's like squeezed together. It's like all super tight. So to get out of my car, I had to like propel myself up using like the handle on the door and like kind of jump over like the hump of the seat and everything. So I get out, I somehow get my kids out and I write a note and leave it in the car. And I said, please learn how to park respectfully or something along those lines.
Too polite.
And I know, right? I should have said, go fuck yourself. But I was afraid like, if it's someone that works there or something, that I'm there all the time. So I'm just like, I didn't want to like really offend anyone. But I just wanted to make the point. Like, don't be a dick. Like, I don't care if you're in a rush or whatever else. Just don't be an asshole.
It takes 10 more seconds.
So then I can't find the key fob, right? So now I'm like, shit, did it fall out of my pocket? And like, I'm trying to start the car so it's not in the car. And now I'm like, oh, fuck. Now I thought I lost that. So I go in my other car and get the other one because we have both sets of keys. And I lock the car. I'm just assuming it's gone at this point. So I go in. I'm working out. And the lady from the daycare room comes and gets me. Alex shit his pants. And he doesn't wear a pull-up during the day. So he shit his underwear.
Right.
So I had to stop working out, go in there, and clean him up in the fucking bathroom. Then I come back out, work out a little bit more. Wife comes out. It turns out that she had the other key. So I don't know how the other car was moving at that point. But anyway, she had the key. So we were safe there. The other car was gone. My tire came out, went and got the tire replaced. And then we went to lunch and the kids were just like out of their freaking minds. Like, just like, it was like one of those times, like we try and stay pretty calm in public to not be those parents, but we were totally those parents at this restaurant.
Right.
Just like, it looked like we had like no control over our kids. It was insane. So it was just like one of those no holds barred days I had.
Wife not only is responsible for breaking the tire by telling you to go into this thing, but also stole your key and caused you that much stress.
Yeah, and she cost me probably about 10 extra minutes of working out because I walked around in circles looking under the car, thinking it fell out of my pocket when I did the hurdle. You know what I mean? And she was in a class. So I couldn't really like text her, like just barge in and like, where's the fucking key? You know? So I just was like, whatever, it's gone. So yeah, it was just like an overall shit morning. And then I ended up going to AT&T, and I somehow got talked into getting DirecTV, as those in our live chat group are now aware of. It was fine. I'm actually excited about it. So anyway, that's all that. So that was now, my day.
Yes. Now let me ask you something. Yeah. Is your wife takes group classes at the gym? Is that it?
Like half the time.
Is she nice to the people at the gym?
I think so.
Yeah, because she's very nice. Because I worked at a gym for 6 years, mm-hmm. and by far the biggest assholes were the women who took the classes at lunchtime.
Well, I'll say this: it's the YMCA, so the clientele may be a little bit different than like maybe a gym you were at. It's a lot of like older women and
okay,
like moms.
Oh, this was older women.
Yeah,
this is older women upset that there were people around her in a group class.
yeah, that's a bit much. No, I I don't think it's – I haven't heard of any issues like that there. So
came in and screamed at us once because the temperature in the room was 65 degrees instead of 63.
Well, there you go.
At the end of the class. At the end of the class.
Right, so she sweated through it, soaked through it, and then came and bitched. Yeah.
That's unhealthy.
Anyway,
I'm sure she's not like that, but –
She may be. Who the fuck knows?
This is my view of all those people right now.
So anyway, it was an expensive day because of the tire.
Yeah, no shit.
Wasn't happy about that. All right, let's talk wrestling. So our first fall.
Let's talk tires.
That's going to be our top five. You ruined it.
Top five tires.
Top five tires.
Why did everyone shut this off when we got to our top five?
I do not like Michelin right now because of how much they cost. All right, so first of all, we're going to talk some wrestling, and as has been our wont over the first three episodes, we are talking GWWE Tag Team Project, and we're going to talk through three teams.
Love it. And this week, this isn't really a weekly show, but
whatever,
you get the drift.
Episode...
We had teams suggested to us by a Mr. Jason Sherman.
Oh, cool.
So we will tackle some of those teams today. Yeah. And I was talking to him today, too, a little bit. In fairness, he suggested the teams, like, I don't know, like whenever our last show dropped. And then we both were like, okay, let's do them. And then we both forgot what they were. And so then a couple days ago, I wrote him and I was like, hey, what are they? And so he gave a couple thoughts on the teams, too. So I'd like to kind of go through those as well, since he was kind enough to give us the suggestion.
I say we do it.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jason.
Yeah. And anybody who has suggestions for anything regarding our show at all, please write them in and we'll tackle them as best we can because we're pretty boring on our own.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
All right. So why don't you tell us the first team?
Sure. Well, the first team Jason wanted us to talk about was Mosh and Thrasher, the Headbangers.
Let's try to think how the song goes.
Da-na-na. There's a guitar.
And this headbanging. So. Yep. Thrasher is a Place to Be podcast alum.
Right.
Glenn Ruth, we had him on for a really cool interview. He was a really nice guy.
And Mosh banged his mom.
And then beat his wife.
Yeah, who is also his mom. It was weird.
Oh, 99.
Yeah. So the Headbangers.
I think
Mosh,
that's what that Toto
Thrasher
song was about, 99. They were talking about 99 WF. 99.
Which, is that what Prince is partying like? Yeah. Your mom.
Oh, 99, Vince Russo's worst fucking year.
Oh God, what a sludge to get through 99. Yeah. I watched the year in pay-per-view a few months ago, and it took forever. Yeah. Awful.
Imagine thinking that at the time, though. Like at the time, it was like, oh my God, this is amazing stuff. Imagine thinking like you'd be looking back, like 20 years later, and thinking this is awful. Could you even fathom that at the time?
No. And then there's the other part of you, which is like, you know, now we're excited, like, maybe The Rock will do a pre-taped interview.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Back then we got him every week.
Right. Okay. So, talk to me.
Headbangers. Well, look, I mean, Mosh and Thrasher, for me, I quite liked the Headbangers at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they were fun. They debuted, what, late 96, early 97? That's about right, eh?
It was very late 96, I believe, because they debut as the Headbangers. So they were actually around as the Spiders. Like, so I don't know if that counts as a separate run for them. But they were around as the Spiders for a while. And then they showed up as the Headbangers very late 96. And then they came out as the Flying Nuns.
Yeah, with Brother Love.
Sisters of Love / Flying Nuns on Shotgun Saturday Night. They do that. And then they go back to being the Headbangers. So
right.
They debuted the November 24, 96 Superstars as the Headbangers against Alex Porteau and Aldo Montoya. We can
what a team.
See if we're going to rank them eventually.
When are we going to talk about them?
Then they started being the Flying Nuns, Sister Angelica and Mother Smucker. And also then, of course, became Sisters of Love. Their Measure of Love. That was very short-lived. And then they went back to being the Headbangers in January. So that's really, you know, when their official Headbangers run truly starts is January 97.
Yeah.
And they're there until, what, mid-2000?
Yeah. I mean, they're doing a lot of weird stuff by then. Like, they're wearing the fake tits and shit.
Right, yeah.
well, actually,
Mosh sticks around until July 01. Thrasher was gone in July 2000.
When is Lowdown? When is that a thing?
Yeah, that's 2000.
Right. And that's Mosh. Yeah, okay, right. I would always get them mixed up as a teenager. For some reason, I couldn't keep them straight.
Yeah, Mosh was the fatter one.
Right.
Yeah.
And Thrasher was like the drug addict.
Correct.
Yeah. Not an actual, but just the way his body looked.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. The first time I noticed them was at WrestleMania 13.
Mm-hmm.
I think that match, which is the four-team match, is not a half bad tag match, all things considered.
Well, especially when you look at where they came from in 96 in the tag division, like I think that helps them a lot. You know,
yeah.
In a way they feel like the spiritual successor of the Smoking Guns, right? I mean, like the Guns were kind of the, you know, the best of the bunch during that downtime, and then they kind of fade and the Headbangers kind of become like the new stalwarts.
Yeah.
And almost like they become the new, like, oh, these guys are good by comparison, although I think they actually were pretty good.
Oh, they're fun, yeah.
Yeah. But I think a big part of their appeal, too, is they were in there with the rebirth of the division. So, Furnace and LaFon, Owen and Bulldog.
Blackjacks, the new Blackjacks.
Right, Blackjack, Heel Godwins, Legion of Doom comes back, the Headbanger. Yeah. Right, so they're part of, like, this new wave of refreshing of the tag division. They're kind of almost like the forebearers to the real rebirth in 99-2000. So, like, they're there now through the bridge between the real low point and the rebirth. They're in that bridge zone. And we also should mention, by the way, that they did come back in 2016 for a real quick cup of coffee. They were in
right.
the SmackDown Tag Team Tournament, and then they were on again a couple times in November that year. So.
And they were still fine. They weren't
I was hoping
bad.
They'd stick around. Like, I thought they actually could have some value.
Yeah, well, there's always value in, like, right. an actual team, like,
right.
as opposed to, like, two guys thrown together, which is what so many teams today are.
Exactly. And, like, I think even NXT, like, they could have had some value helping to put over teams and whatnot. Like, you know, they're fine enough workers. So, WrestleMania 13 is good. And then, obviously, their real big key moment would be later that year when they win the tag titles at Ground Zero. They were vacated
yep.
by Steve Austin to do Love. And they win them in the four-way thanks to an assist from Austin. That's kind of their peak. And then they lose them to the Godwins of Bad Blood.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it.
In terms of their any sort of relevance.
Right. They stick around for a while, like we said. So they do the whole thing. They feud over the NWA titles with the Rock and Roll Express. They actually win those belts. And then in 98 as well, they feud with the Oddities like late in the year. The Headbangers turn heel. And they end up hooking up with ICP and all that stuff in late 98. And then injuries start to take their toll. And then we get the Beaver Cleavage stuff and the Chaz stuff. And then Glenn Ruth ends up showing back up. Remember, he was actually supposed to be like an evil clown. Do you remember that whole rumor?
Yes.
He was
yes.
going to show up as an evil clown. And they shelve that. And he ends up just hooking back up with Mosh. They prove that Mariano was lying about getting beaten up. And that was it.
And then yeah. she became his mom.
No, it was the mom first.
Right. Mom, then
right.
beaten wife.
Yeah, it was Beaver Cleavage, and then that doesn't last very long, and then they just, like, he does the whole shoot thing, like, this is dumb, my name's Chaz, this isn't my mom, it's my wife. Right, they, you
it's
know,
my
they do that. Yeah, yeah. And then they start doing the thing where he's getting accused of beating her and everything, and then Glenn Ruth returns to show the GTV footage that she was making it up.
Was Glenn Ruth the G in GTV?
I know, right? Could have been.
Imagine what a letdown. Like, look, Glenn Ruth, nothing against him, but imagine what a letdown that would be.
Oh, God,
revealed.
Yeah. Although what's it's probably worse? Better than what we got, which was nothing. So.
Which was nothing. I don't know. I don't know if it's
oh,
better.
Oh, you think it's worse? Okay.
It might be worse. I mean, like when we got Hornswoggle as the anonymous GM, that was pretty bad.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair dinkum, as my favorite Australian would say.
Favorite Australian. Have you ever met an Australian who's not happy?
No, I mean, I've only really met Stacy. That's about it.
And you were at WrestleMania, so I'm sure she was happy.
Oh, she was happy.
Hadn't she just, like, met Trish Stratus? She must have been on fucking cloud nine.
I've never seen anyone more euphoric than her after meeting the Divas. I mean, she was, like, in a fucking haze. It was, like, I don't know if she even, like, remembers that I was in, like, her peripheral sphere at that point. I'm, like, talking to her, and she's just, like,
huh?
Yeah, and she's, like, just had this glaze, like, oh, my God, I just met, like, this woman I love.
Yes, so. Trish. I just watched with my son the Australian Simpsons episode. Do you remember that? Where he goes to Australia.
Yeah. Oh, vaguely. Was that like mid-tier? Like middle years? Oh,
it's like season six. It's early.
Mm.
But it's like, that's a bullfrog. I thought a bullfrog, I would have called him a chuzzwaza.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So this is one of those shows that's like eternally on my rewatch list, and I know I'll never get to it. Like, yeah, I just... Whatever. I know the first few seasons really well. When they did that Every Simpsons Ever, I was like in heaven because I remembered so many of the early ones so well, and it was cool to watch when they first did it, like however many years ago. It was, you know, 7 or 8 years ago when they did it. Like reliving those first like 5 or 6 seasons was awesome. And then I just...
It's to like 8 or 9, and that's when it starts to kind of like
suffer
from what I remember. But I'm only watching now because my kids are liking them. And what's great about it is that they laugh at all the hijinks and any of the sexual stuff just goes over their heads.
Yeah, way past.
Like they don't get it at all. So, and it Nikki, is. My wife is always like, are you sure they should be watching this? I'm like, he's not laughing at the sex jokes. He doesn't know.
He doesn't get it. Yeah. I remember still watching in college because Adam Murray, my roommate for most of my years there, was like a huge fan, and we had to watch it every Sunday. I think after that is when I really just faded away from it. Maybe I watched like a little sparingly right after that, but like I haven't really watched maybe more than like 3 since like 2002.
we're in the exact same path, you and I. Like I haven't touched any of that new stuff.
All right, so.
Headbangers.
In 2000, they really are in like the hardcore division, right? That's the most like they're in that WrestleMania, the hardcore battle royal, and then they're doing all the stuff with the like Crash, you know, they chase them through the funhouse and like all that shit. So they pretty much do that until they separate. So they're a definite rank, like easy.
Sure,
rank.
Because they had a lot of cohesion as a team, which is really nice.
Compare them to the Guns for me. I think there's a lot of similarities.
Yeah, I think solid hand. I like the cohesion of the characters. I like the cohesion of their moves. I thought they had a lot of interesting, different dynamic tag moves that were based on moshing and thrashing.
Yes,
which I thought was fine. Like it's not often that you get like, it's not often you get like an onomatopoeia like that works in wrestling.
Right.
I think they were. I quite like them. I don't know if they have as many good to very good matches as, say, the Guns have. So they'd probably be a bit below them. They weren't kind of the stall. They were around as long, but I don't think they were around as long as a team as the Guns.
No, that's fair.
I definitely am going to rank. I really like their work. I remember when they won the tag title being really happy. I thought that was really cool.
Well, it felt a lot like the Guns. Like, they had been around for most of the year, and, you know, they kind of presented as a top team early, and then LOD comes in, Bulldog and Owen, Sean and Austin and Dude Love. Like, the titles get elevated, and it almost feels like it's out of their reach. You know what I mean? Like, they get pulled up beyond them. So to see them, it's very much like the Guns, actually. Like, it's very symmetrical to the Guns 95, where the Guns are in the title picture, but then boom, now the titles are up around Owen and Yoko and Luger and Davey. And, you know, it almost feels like it's past the Guns. And then right in around the fall, the same month, September, the Guns are kind of reestablished as the leads, and the Headbangers get that too. It's just that they don't have much of a reign.
No.
You know, they only have it for a month. And then the Godwins take back over. And that was really just to get it on the LOD, which was fine. And then eventually to the Outlaws.
They also get a pretty early Outlaws feud too. Them busting the radio on their head. That was a pretty good moment.
I think it was pretty much the first Outlaws feud, I believe.
Yeah.
That was actually the Outlaws debut.
That's right. Yeah. But like, yeah, they were they also feuding with LOD at the same time? Am I crazy? Or am I remembering that wrong?
It was Headbangers like initially, and then LOD at the end of the year. Because they don't get to the it's pretty much at the end of the year when they start getting in it with them. And then around that same time, they start fucking with Cactus and Chainsaw too. Like, it's all like kind of in the same boat. And then I think the Headbangers still like are fighting them into early 98. But I think the Boombox, I believe, is like early, like really early Outlaw stuff, because then they're on opposite teams at Survivor Series.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I think, and as I will concur with Mr. Sherman, who, when I asked him, probably somewhere in the 50 or around the top, like around there.
Yeah, I think that feels right. I mean, I think in a vacuum, I actually like them better than the Guns.
Like,
if you had to present to me two matches, and one was a Headbangers match and one was a Guns match, I'd probably take in the Bangers. But that could also have to do with the era. You know, like, I don't know how much of that is swayed by, I'd rather watch a match from 97, 98 than like 94, 95 at this point.
Right.
So I don't know how much like that speaks to it as well, and like the quality of opponents. Like, I'd rather watch Headbangers, Bulldog, and Owen versus over like Guns, Owen, and Yoka. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, I don't know how much of the ancillary pieces have to do with it. But I think that I really like the Headbangers. They were good in the ring. I thought their gimmick was solid, especially it was a fairly, you know, I think a fairly timely gimmick. Would you agree?
I think it was Marilyn Manson time. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, it maybe like a year or two off the peak of that, but
well,
not
what
so
is
far.
Marilyn Manson
like,
at its peak? Wasn't it like 97, 98?
Yeah. But I mean, grunge itself was, I mean, not that it wasn't big, but I think its biggest period was like 93, 94.
Yeah, but they're not really grungy. Like, they are, but they're more...
Yeah, they're kind of dressing...
They're more like death metal, right? So, which was actually probably earlier even. But
did they create death metal? Is that what we're implying here?
I think they were pioneers.
Definitely pioneers. Because every pioneer I've ever pictured has that skirt and that weird face paint.
All right, so Beautiful People came out in 96. So,
okay.
Right around the time. Sweet Dreams was 95, and then Dope Show was 98.
Some of them!
And then he's still apparently making songs now, so there you go.
Why is he still so upset, Marilyn Manson?
Yeah, it's like, you know, feel better. All right,
how much money do you need to not be upset anymore, Marilyn?
So just a real quick background. They started teaming up in 94 in Jersey. They actually made an appearance in I'll be getting to it, June 94 ECW. They work as the Spiders for a while, and they actually started the Headbangers gimmick in Smoky Mountain. So they were doing it in 95. So they were pretty much dead on, I think, actually, with the whole thing. And then they showed up in the WWF from December 95 as the Spiders, and
Spiders.
Also themselves as jobbers.
That's just that they were jobbers.
Yes. Well, it's, even as their real names, I believe they were as jobbers.
The Jobbers!
So we'll probably be seeing them soon on Wrestling Warzone, because it's December 95 they show up.
Right. Yeah, that must be one of the fun things watching that, is seeing all the jobbers who became guys later.
Oh, that's one of my favorite parts of doing that show, Chad, is like we're really focusing on like some of the obscure stuff. Like, we're tracking, because I've seen all this stuff, but it's cool to track like the one-offs and who pops up where and when, even if it's only for like a week, and we're tracking like dropped angles and stuff like that. We're really trying to focus on the forgotten stuff. Like, you know, we're going to talk about the big stuff too, but we're really, really zoning in on the little things, the little forgotten angles and people who show up here and there. So that's kind of been the fun part of that.
Cool. So Headbangers, that's pretty, I think we're pretty much all on the same page.
Okay.
That.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. 50s feels right. So congrats, Headbangers.
Who is the next team on our list?
Do you like to do it yourself?
No, I prefer to just let my wife do most of this work. And I kind of sweep in and just do the fun stuff, you know?
Okay, well, it's a 40-year-old virgin reference, but okay.
Was it? I wasn't even trying to do that.
Have you watched that? You've seen the movie? Yeah?
Yeah, but I haven't seen it in years. Did I actually quote it?
No, you fucked up. Mine was the reference.
Oh.
Because he says when he's trying to do... he's with Seth Rogen, he goes, dude, just pretend you're David Caruso to just try to pick up the, what's her name? Amy Smart. Is that who it is in that one?
Oh, in the bookstore?
Yeah, and he's like, do you like to, she's like, we have a big helping of do-it-yourself books. Do you like to do it yourself? So anyway, that was my reference.
Just ask your questions.
Hashtag DIY is team number two suggested by Mr. Sherman. And that is, of course, Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano, as some may call him, Johnny Gargano. So talk to me about these fellas, Chad.
Well,
Chad, got Wrestling Wars on the mind.
Oh, these fucking fellas. Well, I believe they started teaming in the Dusty Rhodes Classic of 2015.
Sounds right.
And their first match was against Tyler Breeze and Bull Dempsey. And I remember that being okay. But then they ended up losing in the second round to Baron Corbin and whoever he was teaming with, Rhino, which is a travesty. So they go into team for
Rhino's
like
Baron Corbin's best case scenario, right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
That's
yeah,
like
yeah.
a ceiling right there.
Well, did they think that naming him Constable would give him credibility?
I think that's the way to get him to shave his head. They're like, all right, if we can mind trick him, we're going to give you this real good position, but you're going to look real corporate. So you're going to shave your awful hair.
Oh, my God. If he thinks it's a real position, do they give him a badge?
Whatever it is, I'm guessing they only did it to shave his head. That's my guess. Although I still don't get why they didn't have him lose a hair versus hair match. That confounds
it makes,
me.
That makes no sense at all.
You know?
And why is he suddenly wrestling in clothes?
Well, that's what constables do.
No, they don't. They don't, though. Not in wrestling. Like, it's not a uniform either. Like, the Big Boss Man at least had a uniform on.
Yeah, I don't know. They seem to think that's, like, I don't know, like Corporate Kane. He wrestled in a suit. So, I don't know. Obviously, they just think it's his. If you're an authority figure and you wrestle, now you have to be in professional clothing. Business casual clothing, at least.
I have never really been behind a wrestler who isn't wearing wrestling gear. I have so much trouble with it. Like, I don't like Dean Ambrose because of what he's wearing most of the time.
Hmm.
And Constable Corbin looks like a fucking fool with his shaved head and his tucked in shirt and his slacks. You can't wear slacks to a wrestling match. Anyway, so they lose to them, which is a travesty. And I think they have a lot of really good matches on NXT, like pretty much whenever they're teamed up, Gargano and Ciampa. It's good stuff. But then in 2016, they really hit their stride as challengers for the Revival.
Mm-hmm.
And building up to that, they have a great match with American Alpha as well. I think it's near the end of 2015, that one, actually. Hold on. I wrote them down today.
Look at you with notes.
I know. I actually did some research. It was October 22nd, 2015, NXT. Check it out. And then they challenge the Revival, and they have those two series of matches with the Revival at NXT Brooklyn, at TakeOver Brooklyn and TakeOver Toronto. And I still think that I've yet to see any tag matches in the WWF, WWE that are better than those two matches. I like the second one a bit more, where they win the titles. And that's a 2 out of 3 falls one also.
And that's Toronto, right?
Yeah. Okay. But those matches to me are a cut above any other tag match. I mean, even the great ones that we'll talk about in other instances. Mm-hmm. And
you put both of these ahead of Edge and Ray, Kurt and Benoit?
Yeah. Also, from the perspective of, and I know this might, like, I don't know if this is a double standard at all, but it's a straight tag match.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the other one is still it's a straight tag match too, but
yeah.
I'm thinking of the triple threat they had on another show.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about No Mercy.
I'm on board now. I know what you're talking about. No, I would definitely put it above that in terms of just like straight tag selling, tag work, tag team stuff. Whereas I love that match, and I think the Angle Benoit Edge Ray is a 5-star match. I wouldn't disagree with you on that, or I don't know. Is that what you have it at as well?
Oh yeah,
I'm assuming. But no, I love it. But I think this is just a more pure tag match as opposed to a great match involving four guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so we give the Revival a lot of credit, or at least I do, and I will agree with when I was talking to Jason about this. It's a point I was going to bring up as well, that like if you're going to give the Revival credit for those matches, you have to give DIY the right. same amount of credit, because they are absolutely – I don't know if one is better than the other in those matches. I mean, the matches wouldn't succeed if DIY wasn't as over as faces, but it also wouldn't succeed if the Revival weren't an awesome heel tag team. I think it's just a perfect marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So they get those two matches. again, which are tremendous. In the next year, the beginning of 2017, they have a great match with TM61 on the 4th of January 2017. TM61 is another team that I quite like. They don't get a lot of stuff to do. They fight the Revival again on January 11th, which is my birthday, and I know they did it just for me. Okay. Mm. I turned 37 that day, and it was, you know, thank you, you know, Revival. And then they have a kind of a forgotten match that I don't hear a lot of people talk about, is they have a triple threat tag at TakeOver Orlando with the Authors of Pain and the Revival. And it's tremendous. Like, it's just awesome, awesome stuff. And then so they got this great catalog of about a year and a half of incredible tag matches, the best matches in company history, from my vantage point anyway. The rest, I mean, every tag match they have is good at least, and some are very good, some are great. And then if you want to factor in their breakup, you're probably looking at first or second best tag team breakup of all time.
Right.
In the company.
What's the other one, the Rockers? Is that your comparison?
Yes, the Rockers. But the Rockers don't have the matches that these guys have.
Right. But if you're saying pure breakup, I'm saying that's what you're putting it at?
Well, I'd include the matches in the breakup. Okay. Like, that's, yeah, I mean, the actual...
Oh, you're saying the follow-up matches.
Yeah. Yeah.
See,
yeah.
I don't count that. I'll count the breakup. I'm not counting the quality of the singles matches. Like, to me, that's... It's a different animal. Like, those aren't tag matches. You know what I mean? So it's I'll count all their tag catalog, and then I will count the breakup angle, but I'm not counting the matches, especially like, I mean, Gargano and Ciampa, it's like a year, you know what I mean? Years
yeah.
after. It's
well,
like,
but,
to me,
but,
those, sh- it's just, I don't know.
But that's just so telling that team was so, that worked so well together and the story was so well embedded mm-hmm. that they could mine a year out of it.
Yeah. Okay.
And they're still mining it. Really? When you look at it. So for me, DIY then really starts to look like a top 10 contender, mm-hmm. which seems crazy, but like their run is not super long, but it's just concentrated excellence and greatness, like more so than anybody else. So,
right.
And like, you know, I don't know what they'll. I don't know if they'll ever put them back together and put them on the main roster. You know, like we might
imagine if they put them back together, right? I mean, they could.
How could they after that feud?
But I mean, come on, it would be ridiculous. I mean, you can't. It's not just a normal split. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you never know. They've done stupider things. So I mean, Austin, Triple H tried to murder Austin in a car.
Yeah, but even that wasn't as bad as this. Like, that was cartoony.
But yeah, so I think I'm thinking top 10 maybe. I'd have to kind of base them and see where we go. I think the more I think about it, they might finish ahead of the Revival, who I would have never thought that before I really looked into DIY.
I was just about to ask you that. How do they compare it to the Revival for you?
I think the Revival have a couple of more matches that I like more. Like, they're in every DIY match that I think is among the best.
Right.
The Revival's in also. But the Revival also has the series with American Alpha, which I really think is very good. Mm-hmm. And I find the Revival has a longer NXT run where they're consistently doing very good to great matches. So it'll be interesting to see, like, kind of when I really take a look at the two of them together. But, you know, they might finish back-to-back. That might be one of the things where it's like, I don't know. Like, they're definitely a cut above all these guys.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about this off air. For whatever reason, the NXT stuff doesn't hold with me mentally as well, and not from a quality point of view, but I mean, just from like easily remembering like all the matches and you know, it's just for whatever reason, like I don't know if it's just don't watch it as much week to week, but I've seen all the takeovers, but they all blend a lot for me. That said, I was in person for the Brooklyn 2 match, which was like amazing, one of the best matches I've ever seen live. Obviously, we're calling it, you know, whatever, top one or two, three tag match of all time with the company. So that was, you know, that was amazing to see live. And then, yeah, the Toronto match is incredible too. And the breakup is great. Yeah. I mean, I don't see how you could argue that they're not top 10 to 12 in that realm. I think they're comparable to the Revival. Like, I would say they're, I'd probably at this point have them like back to back. You know what I mean? Like, I think they're just, they kind of go hand in hand. And we had singles guys like that, right? that were kind of like these two just belong together on the list, and I feel like those two teams kind of belong together on the list.
Now, what stops them from being a number one contender? Which and now that we're kind of talking it out, because like again, if we're operating under the assumption that their matches with the Revival are way ahead of everything else, like does it then just become longevity? Does it become like, because like you could make the argument that like, because we've talked a bit on the past on the show about how certain tag teams transcend the division, right? Well, I mean, they were getting an NXT as a team far and away some of the loudest reactions on the show, right? An already vocal audience, obviously, but like they were already like pretty much they could have main evented those takeovers with those,
right?
If they wanted to, and they just didn't, right? So, do we give them credit for that? Does longevity ding them enough to push them back? Like, if we're talking about like. Like we've both kind of said, like New Age Outlaws are top 10, right? Are they? Should they go ahead of the New Age Outlaws? Like the Outlaws were huge and over, but nothing coming anywhere close to the match quality.
Yeah, I think part of it probably depends how much. How much stock you put in like the NXT versus like main eventing major pay-per-view thought, right? So I know there's a thought out there that like, and some folks completely even discounted NXT, right?
Yeah.
So is doing work on NXT comparable to like the New Age Outlaws who were main eventing major pay-per-views along with like Shawn Michaels and Triple H and Steve Austin, like the biggest stars of their time.
Right.
I think TakeOver is kind of getting there. But I don't know. It's a tough comparison. Like a TakeOver in 2016, I have a hard time comparing to, you know, like being in the third match on the top at WrestleMania 14, right? Or being in the most overstable, arguably, in company history throughout the summer of 98. Like the Outlaws just kind of have this heady territory. I think for DIY, it just comes down to what your personal preference is when it comes to ranking these teams. Is it in-ring quality and cohesiveness as a team and just output, right? So they have all these great matches. They're obviously technically a great team. And, you know, they were in a prominent position on whatever you want to call NXT as a brand. Or do you factor longevity? So do you see a team like the Usos or the Rockers? Like, you know, ton of longevity, a lot of big moments and matches, more of the Usos than the Rockers. But Usos were never really a main event squad, right, in WWE.
Yeah.
But they have the longevity and they have a lot of really great matches on the main roster. So as a pure tag team, sure. And then you get to teams like the Outlaws or like a Demolition that were kind of game changers and kind of a cut above when you look at where they're presented as, you know, kind of card placement and kind of rising above, or even like we talked about the Edge and Christians and Hardys. So I don't know. Like it's this, there's no like set unique criteria like we have with the singles, in a way,
yeah, which and, makes it
because
difficult.
we didn't put the categories in place here. This is kind of open interpretation. It makes it a little difficult.
Yeah, because all of those things have value, like longevity with quality has value, but so does having the best matches in company history, right? So then it just depends which you're going to put more, higher, less, like. That's the whole trick with this whole project. And that's what I actually find very interesting about it. And what I think is going to be interesting is how, whereas like when we saw the top 20 of the GWWE, all of it made sense.
Right.
Right. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah, sure. Sure. Maybe Jericho's a bit hot, you know, like little things like that. Right. But I think what we'll find with this one, when the voting comes in, is it's going to be a lot more all over the place, which I think will be much more fascinating. And I hope that people just kind of, I don't want to say build your own criteria, because then that leads to guys like MVP like being on the list instead of AJ Styles, right?
But
like,
right.
But it is interesting to see what everybody values. Like I know for me they're higher, and now that I'm talking it through, like I don't know if they're more I don't think they're more important than the Outlaws. I know I like them more. They're more interesting to watch. They're a better team, better workers. Like, there's a lot at play there. And then if you're factoring in that importance so high, then are you considering the Outlaws for the number one spot, right? Like, in my number, I had never considered them for a number one spot because the matches just aren't there. But if you really start to favor how important they were, then they jump in that conversation.
So is it like a Venn diagram where you're looking for the team that hits the circle the most, right? So the Outlaws, you know, they're really strong on three of the outer circles, but they don't cross over much, right? DIY is kind of the same, but a team like the Hardys.
Yeah,
to me, are kind of the most in the middle, right? They have the main event stuff, the versatility, great in the ring, great characters, they kind of have it all, right? So they kind of right now I'm thinking I may lean more toward that, which teams have the most of everything, but also not shortchanging teams because they have. If they're really lacking in certain areas, I'm not going to, we've talked about it. We have teams we're going to talk about that have one match, right? So,
If you were to give the Outlaws a score on their importance out of 100, what would it be? Just off the top of your head, importance.
As a tag team or just overall?
As a tag team. That's what the project is, right?
As a tag team, I mean, they're in the 90s.
Okay. So then in terms of match quality, if you were to give the DIY a score out of 100, what would it be?
Yeah, 90s.
So it's they're almost equal. Then you got to figure out what that tiebreaker is.
Right. Well, to me, the Outlaws probably better characters, promo, storylines.
Characters?
I don't know.
Like Johnny Gargano's such a good character.
Yeah.
Like,
but did a lot of that come after, or was it during that? I'm spotty, so these are genuine questions.
Yeah, I mean, Johnny Gargano's character, Ciampa's character, almost all of it was after. But Gargano's character as this plucky guy, plucky babyface, has been there from the start, right? So his character is there, right? But their characters also, too, Gargano and Ciampa's characters, the natural progression of their characters also go to a place that goes way higher than the Outlaws. I don't know, but again, I don't know if you factor that in.
Right.
Like Mr. Ass was never a great character outside of that tag team.
Yeah, I don't factor that in.
Maybe when he was banging China.
Right. I don't factor that in because, again, I'm not counting the characters outside of the tag run.
No, me neither. But what I'm saying is that is it the type of character that can grow and can do things? Or are we just looking at the actual character in the moment?
No, just in the moment for me. I don't care what they went on to be. Shawn Michaels, I don't consider Heartbreak Kid as his rocker stuff. You know what I mean? It's completely different.
Who's the best character of the four of them?
I'm not as sharp enough on Gargano, pre this run.
Someone's screaming at their podcast right now every time you say Gargano.
Well, that's how I fucking felt in New Orleans when the asshole in front of us kept calling him Gargano. I just wanted to scream at him. He's got him in the Gargano lock.
I felt the same way. I was listening to Glenn and his brother talk about the Solo movie, and they kept calling Han Solo Han.
Yeah.
And I must have yelled at my radio four times because they bring it up in the movie too.
Right.
See, for me, I think Gargano is probably the best character of the four of them. And again, Tommaso's probably the worst. So again, it's just a stalemate.
Yeah.
Such a strange comparison. The Outlaws and DIY.
No, it is weird. I don't know. I don't know where I'd have them. I don't know. I got to think over it more. But why don't we get to our last team because we're already running pretty long on this episode here.
Sure. So our last team you and I came up with was the thrown together team of Hulk Hogan and Brutus the Barber Beefcake, the Megamaniacs. What are your first thoughts when you hear the word Megamaniac?
I think of steroids.
It wasn't the groan?
I think of facial injuries.
Is it Krusty the Clown groan?
I mean, I don't know. I feel like there's going to be a lot of other, like, really more important one-off teams, you know? Like, we're going to eventually probably talk about Hogan and T, Hogan and Warrior. We talked about a little bit of the two-man power trip. You know, so I think there's other teams that I'd have before these two. WrestleMania 9 hurts them a lot. SummerSlam 89 helps them, right? So they almost kind of cancel. I've never seen the infamous Beverly Brothers match that happened. Actually, no, I think it is on like a Coliseum video somewhere.
What about the cage match?
Yeah, that's not too bad either. I mean, it's okay. I don't know. I think this could be quick, honestly. Like, at this point, I don't expect to rank them.
No, I don't.
I know I could end up now like with 80 teams. Like, fuck, I got to put all these teams on there. So
put the Mega Man.
If they are, I can't imagine they're higher, you know, than 90. You know, like 90 to 100, if on there. But
no.
I mean, they had a main event WrestleMania match, but it was fucking terrible. And you know, the build up, Hogan's not even there. You know, so it's like whatever. And they don't do anything else. And their other shit's just in 89 from SummerSlam through No Holds Barred. They're not even on the same team as Survivor Series. You know, I don't know. It's just like, what's really there? That Stein's main event where they hit him with a chair. Like, I don't know. I just don't think there's enough there. Like, I don't think their quick hits were nearly enough. Like, I'd have the Mega Bucks on before them.
Are they the worst of the Mega teams?
All right. Well, if you throw them all together, we got Hogan and Savage. You got Hogan and Beefcake. You got Warrior and Savage. Are those the three?
Yeah. Well, okay.
And Hogan Warrior. I guess those four. Yeah, they're the worst of those four.
Yeah, Hogan Warrior's probably next.
I'd go Mega Powers 1, Hogan Warrior 2, Warrior Savage 3, and they did a lot less than the Mega Maniacs. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I like Beefcake, whatever, but I don't know. They're so bad at 9. It's hard to consider it.
Well, because all the other guys are legitimate main eventers. And Beefcake is just, I mean, he's there. He's a very upper tier guy, but he's not a main eventer.
No.
I mean, Zeus is more of a main eventer than Brutus Beefcake.
Hulk Hogan.
Hulk.
Beefcake Baba.
Have you ever seen the promo that Savage, Sherry, and Zeus cut for the cage match?
That's over the cauldron, right? That's before.
Yeah, and with the cage, and she's climbing the cage.
Oh. I don't know if I've seen that one. I've seen the original, like the cauldron one. On the Brother Love show. That's before SummerSlam.
No, this was a pre-tape where they had a cage set up in front of them, and it's worth your time. It's okay. Her climbing the cage, and her just
I've seen it at some point.
While Zeus and Savage are talking, she's just screaming, "You don't know where I am!" And then she falls down on the other side of the cage. Anyway, it's just a great crazy promo. That's the best part of the Mega Maniacs is the opponent's promos.
Yeah, I'm saying that one.
All right, shut it down. Fuck you, Mega Maniac.
Beefcake Baba. All right. No Holds Barred, the match of the movie. Okay,
Boss Man Big.
Take a break. And when we return, we'll get to, God, only our second fall. We'll be back.
Break take now. On my own, here we go. Feel like they're gonna
bleed. Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Take that, take that, take that.
Come on. Ha. Sicker than your average. Pop a twist cabbage off instinct. Niggas don't think shit. Stink pink gators. My Detroit players. Tim's for my hooligans in Brooklyn. Dead right. If the head
right, Biggie there, and I pop up in school. Back we are! And I hope that our long-winded discussion about DIY, Headbangers, and the Megamaniacs didn't draw you off, so to speak.
That's why we rushed it.
Yeah, we really rushed the Megamaniacs because we have no respect for them. The reason being is because now we're going to start a new segment on the show, which is Wrestling Timeline Deep Dive, Deep Dish.
I ate a Pizzeria Uno today.
Oh, you did?
Kids eat free on Tuesdays with an adult entree.
Oh, cool. Yeah, so we're going to take a deep dive. I'm not trying to disregard. I'm actually just trying to move forward.
I'm trying to move laterally, as you can tell.
Well, Todd, let's talk about the pizza then. Rank the pizzas quickly.
I didn't eat the pizza, actually. I had. If you go for lunch, they have a soup bar. Oh. And did that with a lunch-sized Cobb salad. It was delicious.
I hate salad. I don't. There's not one salad on earth that I like.
No?
No, not one. Not even fruit salad. I'm not even a fan. If there was an ice cream salad, I feel like I'd be on board.
Do you like the toss salad?
Oh, yeah, obviously. Obviously.
Okay. Very good. It's a man's game, really.
Jelly or peanut butter?
It's a man's game.
Yeah, it is a man's game. It's a man's world. Yeah. The man's world! He's getting tossed, his salad tossed right there. That's how he could hit those notes.
Is that why Sid's teeth were clenched?
Oh, my salad being tossed. It's bogus.
Jack Tony, you fucked up.
Jack Tony, get your ass down there. Lather up my spoon with fucking strawberry jam. Oh, Jack Tunney. Man, who knew? Who knew Jack Tunney had such a problem?
All right. Well, anyway. So here on the Wrestling Timeline Deep Dive, we're going to pick a year on whenever we do this and run through it. And we're not going to get through the whole year, so we've already capitulated ourselves to say this is part one. Which is fine. I think I'm comfortable doing that. And I'm not saying the next time we do Wrestling Timeline Deep Dive, we'll do part two of this year, right? We may do part one of another year and then come back.
We do what we want.
Huh?
We do what we want.
We do what we want.
Do what we want. You want a fucking ass? A fucking ass.
So I wanted to do 1997.
Nice.
It's a great year. I think it's still my favorite year in wrestling history. So much was going on. It was such an exciting time period. And our goal today is to get through like the first 3 months.
Wow. Ambitious.
Which means we'll probably get through January. That's my
guess. Yeah.
So, we'll see. So we're going to do that. And we're just going to cover WWF and WCW. This is kind of more a wheelhouse where we were at the time. We'll probably touch on ECW like a little bit. Maybe a tints. But nothing else, and probably not much of that. So what I want to do first, Aaron, was just get like a quick profile, just, you know, whatever, minute or less, just kind of where you were as a fan at, like, when 97 was starting.
I kind of lapsed in 95 as a fan and started getting back into it in 96. And by 97, I was all in, like just all in on WWF. And starting to get interested in, and well, not starting, but trying to get more into WCW.
Where were you, like, socially as a wrestling fan? Like, were you real introverted? Did you have wrestling friends? Like, what was your social wrestling status in 97? Because 97 is a key year in the social, like, wrestling social experiment.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's right on when it starts to kind of catch the wave. So I was curious where you were at.
I had a couple of friends who were into it, so I had something of a support system. Mm-hmm. And 97 was probably one of the first years, but later I would say in the year was one of the first years where I felt comfortable wearing wrestling apparel to school.
Right. Yeah. So I was a diehard WWF fan. Had been, like, I mean, 95 and 96 completely locked in, watching everything. And I was a very strong WCW watcher as well, like as far back as 93. So I was watching Raw and Nitro every week. I was watching Saturday Night still. I was watching, I don't know if I was really watching the weekend shows, as they were starting to fade a bit in the WWF.
Yeah.
I was probably still kind of catching like Superstars, like on USA or whatever was on at that point. Shotgun, like, you know, like whatever I could watch. Ordering on the pay-per-views, dirty pay-per-views, going to Jim's house for the WCWs on the black box. So, you know, I'm pretty much all in. And the reason I asked about the social aspect is because it was the same for me. I had like four wrestling fans pretty much at that point, friends. So it was interesting because we 95, 96, it was so, like, you knew in the moment it like wasn't as good and it wasn't the same. And 96 is a lot of excitement, and the NWO and mid-96 really picks it up. And just, God, when 97 hits and all of a sudden it's like, it's such a switch that flips. And I'm curious as Chad and I go through if I still feel the same way. The switch that flips, all of a sudden that's just like, the excitement level is ratchets up. Like, all of a sudden, the main event scene in WWF is crazy. Like, we have like five or six guys going for the title out of nowhere. And Steve Austin is such a big part of why they take off. Just the energy and excitement he has. And, oh, yeah. Shit, here's Brian Pillman. And, you know, Bret Hart's got this edge to him. And Vince McMahon is even getting edgier in commentary. You know, like, everything all of a sudden feels so much more, the stakes are raised. And feel, even The Undertaker feels more real. You know what I mean?
The headbangers are teared up.
The headbangers are on fucking fire. And then in WCW, if you look over there, there's so much going on as well. You know, the NWO is really cranking. The Sting stuff is getting fired up. Savage shows back. So, like, Nitro is just red hot with everything they got going on. So it's such an exciting time to be a wrestling fan. To me, it's like one of the most exciting periods of being a fan. And I know, like, 98 and 99 are hotter. In theory, like, you know, they were, the product was hotter and it was bigger mainstream.
Yeah.
But to me, nothing is more exciting than that stretch from, like, Rumble 97 through Montreal. Like, that year, the year, right, the whole year, is just so... But, I mean, if you really had to, like, narrow it down, I would say the night after Mania. Like, in the WWF, it's the night after Mania till SummerSlam. Like, to me, that's, like, the hot period.
Right.
But even the fall is good because you get all the DX stuff. Like, and that's crazy to start, you know?
See, I loved the beginning of the year, too. I think the beginning
that's really
of the year
good
is awesome.
Yeah, no, it's all really good. So the whole year. I mean, both promotions, the whole year is really good. And you can say it really ends with a thud, I think, in November. Because when December's fine because a lot of stuff happens in there. But it's really, when you look at it, like Montreal and then them fucking Hogan Sting up at the end of the year. Like, so
yeah,
the peak is really like Brett leaving and the rumors of WCW signing him, because then it kind of all goes downhill from there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty good way to look at it. Yeah. So, I mean, look, the first thing that I have to ask you about is how awesome was Sid beating up Pete Lothario?
So good.
Beating the shit out of that kid in front of his dad.
And there's we can talk about this off air, but it's one of the journeys you're on. There's a callback to that, and that year is a big year.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, Pete Lothario getting power run on the table is an amazing moment. The idea of Jose Lothario with Shawn Michaels is so bizarre, you know,
it's
like
so
all
strange
throughout '96. So that's just the end of the road, like where he murders him at Survivor Series, and then he kills
his
son on Raw. Was that '97 though? Or was that late '96? I'm trying to remember.
I believe it was like one of the first things of the year of '97.
Okay. And the early 97 Raws are interesting, too. There's so much, like, going on and, like, just unique atmospheres that they were throwing out there. So, like, they're still in very early in the year. They're still in the smaller arenas, you know. But there's so much more just exciting shit going on. Like, the night after Rumble is when Brett comes out and quits, and they, you know, then he comes back at the end and he flips out about getting screwed at the Rumble. Oh, screwed
right
at the Royal Rumble. You know, it's
everybody
like all that,
knows
all that stuff. Like that Raw is like kind of one of the first like really insane Raws, you know? And then we get the Sky Dome Raw in early 97. It's not like the best show, but it's just kind of like this really unique looking show. It's like very dark. And they have some pretty good matches. They have Vader, Austin, Hunter
yep
House, Helmsley, Merrow, and then Undertaker and Ahmed Johnson against Mankind and Farouk, which is a pretty big match for that time period. Owen
mm-hmm
and Davey against Furnace and LaFon. So it's a pretty stacked card. And when you look at what they had been doing before then, they were still, you know, having jobber matches here and there. So that was like almost like a mini pay-per-view show.
Yeah.
And then we get Thursday Raw Thursday, obviously infamous. Then mm-hmm we get the Nashville Raw. which has the Sid Brett title change, where Austin comes out and they start and stop twice, and like that's an awesome night. And that's when Paul Heyman first calls in as well to challenge to have ECW show up. And then the next week is the Manhattan Center,
ECW,
and that's the ECW Raw. Half the WWF roster was in, I believe, Europe for that one.
Yeah.
So they have the skeleton crew. That's the return of the Legion of Doom. Like that's just an amazing Raw. And then you have the Germany Raw, which is hit or miss, but has Brett and has a Bulldog and Owen.
Yeah.
For the European title, which is an amazing match. And then, and we're almost done doing these, but and then you get the Worcester Raw, which is the debut of the Raw's War format, which is an awesome show as well. Just for that, like you the first time they come in and they got the huge Titantron, and we had already gone 2 hours, I believe. I believe the Nashville Raw was the first 2 hour one. So we're 2 hours now. We got this live arena. Everything's well lit. We're going to be live for a while. That is just like insane. And then the week after that, in the go home to Mania, is the Sid Brett cage match where Brett frustrated is not the goddamn word for it. You know, like all that stuff. Like, so those are the Raws from mid January through WrestleMania. All of them memorable, all important. And it just shows you how quick they ratchet up, because as late as October, November 96, like Raw was still kind of, they have better, but it's like missable, you know, or tapeable, I should say, versus Nitro. But now it's like, holy shit, like stuff is fucking happening on these Raws. And I didn't even touch on like everything that happened. It was like Ken Shamrock showing up, you know, like there's a ton of stuff buried in there. And you know, that reuniting of the tease of the Hart Foundation and like them split, you know, like it's all that stuff is all in there. So my point is, we go from like zero to 150 so fast in early 97, and from a WWE perspective. Now the pay-per-views lag. Like TV is great for most of the year, and it takes pay-per-views a bit to really catch up. Like the Rumble is kind of shaky. Final Four is fine. It has a great main event. And then 13 is obviously, besides Bret and Owen and Bret and Austin, one of the worst Manias. So it takes them some time to figure out the pay-per-views. Those come in the summer. I think Canadian Stampede on, like business picks up. But it's crazy how fast and how exciting the product got. And this all comes back to me saying, like, it was such a doldrum time to be a fan and, you know, sitting alone and talking to just like one or two friends. And now all of a sudden, like, pay-per-views are must-see, talking about it constantly, just like it became like obsessive because it was so good. Like, couldn't wait for fucking Monday. And this is during when I'm in school, like, you know, fuck the weekend. Like, I'm fired up for Monday night. It was crazy to think of that. And we're not even talking about Nitro yet. So I don't know. Just any thoughts on that whole stretch of Raw and like what it meant all of a sudden to the company to hit that?
It became must watch, which it never really was before. You'd have moments, but I thought they did a really good job up and down the card of giving everybody something to do. Whereas like in the past, and like even in 96 in Raw, you'd get a couple of featured matches, but then you'd get like, meaningless stuff here and there. Whereas it felt like almost everything here had some meaning to it. Mm-hmm. And then it also became a lot more unpredictable. Yeah. Like in terms of, I remember Austin running down and just like chop blocking people every now and then. And like him attacking guys like the Bulldog, like attacking heels, which was something they never really did, you know?
And they started doing those tough man matches too.
Yeah.
They would have like Austin versus Mankind and Austin versus Vader. And you know, like, they started throwing out all different guys against each other, you know, regardless. Like, they really started embracing, and it kind of goes hand in hand. Like, I think Jim Ross really took more control in 96, 97. Mm. I know Cornette was still doing like 95, 96. So you can kind of see the correlation to when like Jim Ross becomes like head of talent relations. He must take over after JJ leaves, right? So that's right around late 96.
Yeah.
And that's when they really start focusing on like the tough man style and more brawling and hard hitting wrestling. They did some of that in 96, but it really takes off in 97. And I think that goes hand in hand with like Jim Ross ascending more to power, having more of a realistic, hard hitting program.
Yeah. And I mean, this was the first real time we would see title changes on Raw too. Right. Is Sid beating Brett the first world title change on Raw? I believe it is. You're getting Rocky beating Triple H, and there's stuff happening on these shows,
right?
Whereas it didn't always happen on those shows in the past.
And you're also getting a lot of through lines for the shows. Whereas, like, a lot of like 90, like, I mean, they would have that sometimes in like 94, 95, but it was more like something already set up and they would promote it, have an attack maybe. That, like here, like stuff was beginning, continuing and ending or continuing again all throughout the show.
Yeah.
Like we'd open with this, that would lead to something else, that would lead to something else. Or lead, like it would be a story throughout the show, threading
in
and out.
Connected.
And they really, that really, you know, ramps as the year goes on, like specifically with the Heart Foundation Austin stuff, where yeah. shit would happen in the beginning that would affect the middle of the show that would lead to the main event. Like there's a ton of that throughout 97.
It's the beginning of something that I wish they still did today, which is like wrestler X is fighting wrestler Y, but wrestler Y is related to wrestler A, who's fighting wrestler B, who's also like everything becomes intertwined.
Right.
And they don't care about that anymore at all. Like,
no,
that's
it's
not something.
Segments. Yes.
It's just here's a segment, here's the same. Whereas like everything mattered, and I don't know if that was the Russo influence at all. Mm-hmm. Like the idea of him writing for the lower card guys as well.
Well, I don't think he had really take. He was on the committee.
Yeah,
but he didn't really take over until like April. It's the South Africa show in April. April 14th, I think that's when he takes over writing Raw.
Right, but like, even if he was on the committee, though, you can just strand. Right. I mean, by 98, 99, everything is intertwined. Right? And this is, I feel, the beginnings of it. It's not quite there yet. It starts to get there really when the Heart Foundation becomes a thing, because then you have five guys who are part of a main event storyline who could be paired with any number of guys. And just by that consequence ends up intertwining everything.
Right. Yeah. Because and Austin's attacking them all in every segment. You know, and then it made sense because that's how they start to work Shawn back in when he returns.
Yeah.
And then you still got Undertaker, who's kind of doing his own thing, but also kind of worked in with them. And no, it really does become a much more just cohesive show. The pacing is better, but I think one of the biggest changes is you still get a little bit of the jobber stuff early on in Raw's War. But
sure.
After Mania is when they really start to get away from it. So it's like, boom. All of a sudden now we're getting like Nitro, where it's every match is a big match. There's no more jobbers.
Yeah, which you can make an argument is
right, better or worse,
bad.
But
yeah.
Right. But at the time, it was big because it was so played out and stale, and like we were desperate to not have that anymore. Now you look back and say, okay, they probably left the genie too far out of the bottle with a lot of that.
You could have like two featured matches and everything else, jobber matches. Everyone would probably been happy,
right? Or even three. You know what I mean? Like, whatever it is. Yeah. But at the time, it was like, holy shit! Now every match like all of a sudden means more. You know, and I think. They were actually on to like that mid ground in 96 where they were bringing in guys like Afraid Joe Floyd and elevating Barry Horowitz and TL. Like they were giving these guys gimmicks and having them pick up quick jobber wins and then they'd be like name jobbers. So like they were kind of on to a little bit of that middle ground of, okay, now Raw we can have headbangers against Afraid Joe Floyd and Barry Horowitz and it's not just like a straight job. These guys are getting some offense in their names, you know?
Yeah. They have music.
Correct.
They have entrance music. Now, on a bigger picture, we're talking about Raw. How do you feel about that Royal Rumble? The Rumble itself.
So it's exciting on one hand, but it's also very kind of soft on the other. There's not a ton of I don't say talent, but not a ton of legit contenders in the Rumble match. They had to lean on the AAA guys. Shawn said at that one feels like a real afterthought. It's not as hot as you think it should be. Part of it is Shawn is sick.
Yeah.
Or you could believe that he refused to play the tweener, you know, whatever you want it to be. That's part of it too. But the excitement is there. Like you can feel like some of the air that had been breathed into the promotion.
Yeah.
Is flowing throughout that show. I also think what hurts it is they put it in the Alamo Dome. Probably a year before they should have because
– Right. Well, they still sold like 30-something thousand tickets for it.
Yeah, but it just feels like – I don't know if it's because some of it was papered or some of it was empty. Like it doesn't feel like the energy doesn't jump out of you. Like in 97, you almost feel like they'd be better off in smaller buildings because the crowds are so rabid. You know, like when they're in the Saddle Dome, it's like insane because it's just like, you know, it's not a huge place and they're just piled on top of each other. It almost feels like until they were ready to really burst, like they should have avoided that kind of stuff. I don't know. So I don't blame them for doing it. Like I get why.
No.
I'm just saying, I think it hurts the show a bit, the overall dynamic. And it's funny too, because a year later at the 98 Rumble, the roster's even fucking thinner.
Right.
which is crazy to think, but they were really just flushing everyone out.
See, I tend to think of the 97 Rumble itself as a much maligned Royal Rumble. Because for me, we'll get to the contenders in a second, but for me, I would rather a Rumble that tells a great story throughout that has less top contenders than one where it's just a bunch of guys in the ring who might win, but like there's no story. So for instance, the next year. Like the next year, I mean, there's a story in it that everybody wants to get Austin out, right?
Yep.
But that doesn't happen till like number 24 or 25.
Right.
So you spend 45 minutes with nothing going on. You have The Rock in there, but he's not really doing much. Whereas the 97 one, you have Austin's story throughout, which is hugely entertaining and super well booked. Like the way he gets rid of people, the way they time Bret Hart coming out, and then they have their feud. And by the time you get to the end of that Rumble, all the best guys are in there, and all of them feel like they have an equal chance to win.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that happens very often at all. Like it might be the last – like from the time Bret comes in till the end, you could probably make an argument for quite a few of them winning.
Yeah.
You know, whereas that doesn't like – I mean you could see Bret winning. You could see Austin winning. You could see Undertaker winning. You could see Vader winning. You could see maybe Mankind. You never know. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He had come off of Mind Games and was a little bit further back. So there was a lot of options there. And then the way they did that finish too that kept Austin strong – for me, it's probably a top five Rumble, despite the Mexican guys, because the Mexican guys come in and get thrown out, like they're fodder for Austin. Mm-hmm. So like it doesn't. I feel people remember that one as it's the one with all the Mexican guys, but like their combined time in the ring is like I'd rather have those Mexican guys than almost anybody who's in 95.
Yes.
You know?
Like, it's a good Rumble. I mean, I was thinking about the whole show as like a whole.
No, the whole show is up and down. Although you get Vader Undertaker, which is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty good match on that show. You have one of the weak points of the early 97 WWF
Hunter Goldust.
Is Goldust Triple H.
Yeah.
Is awful. But Rumble 97, you also get like, the 100 guys coming to the ring for the Nation of Domination.
Yes, that's
which I've always loved.
And that Ahmed going nuts and powerbombing through the fucking table and all that. Like that's a cool moment.
And that match at Mania is great.
Everything you're talking about, like the guys at the end and all that, like that speaks to the chaos that they built around the world title in late 96 into 97. Because now instead of for so long, you know, it's really bad in 96. It's just like a champion and a guy going after him, right? Like that's the program. And now all of a sudden, in late 96, all of a sudden it's like, all right, Sid is champ all of a sudden, and Bret wants the belt, but Shawn's got a claim, and now here's Undertaker. He wants a champ. You know, so it's like all of a sudden all of these guys are in the mix and have a legit, you know, complaints for the belt. And we see that on Raw where Bret comes out the next night and he's bitching and, you know, all these guys have a claim. And now Final Four, we got all these four guys going at, like, and Eddie even could be champion. And on the, even beyond that, we got Sid and Shawn still in the periphery. So it really speaks to the importance and the way they did, the way they put things together around the title picture.
Yeah. And that was the brilliance of it. Like they had never done that before. And it's something I wish they would get back to now. Like one of the big problems I have with the current product, and I've had it for a long time, is that when they stripped away any drama that you watch, or any comedy for that matter as well, the whole story structure is based around having a goal. The characters need goals, right? That's why you get invested in them.
Right.
And around this time and forever, everybody's goal was to be the WWF champion. You know, like Roddy Piper would cut promos about it. Bruce Beefcake would be like, I got to beat Honky Tonk Man, and it's on my path to becoming WWF champion. And it was an easy goal, and it's a goal that makes sense based on the context of the program. But they removed that goal.
Right.
It's not important to everyone anymore. And so just naturally, you have a bunch of aimless characters.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, why is someone feuding with this person? There's no reason for it. Oh, because he spilled coffee on him or whatever. And that's a bad example. But, you know, like – instead of they switched from letting storylines come out of the matches as opposed to letting matches coming out of the storylines. And this is kind of right before it happens. I think it happens somewhere around maybe not right before. It probably happens around 2002, 2003. It's when they really get into the rematch stuff that it becomes, I think, a bit of a problem. But yeah, like all these people want the title and they're all working towards getting the title. And that's what the whole show should be about. So everyone is immediately elevated to being important. And that's what makes the next pay-per-view so successful as well. I mean, the undercard is not great of Final Four, but that main event is tremendous. I mean, a lot of that is Vader bleeding like a fucking pig everywhere. But it's a very solid, great match.
Yeah, I mean, even First and the Fond and Bulldog, that one's pretty good on that show.
Oh, it's good. See, you know, we're talking about Stalwarts before with the headbangers. Mm-hmm. Like, we're talking about the headbangers being the Stalwarts. Furnace and LaFond should have been those Stalwarts. I feel like they should have been the team to be like, okay, this is a team that's going to carry the tag division forward. But they got hurt, right? That's what ended up happening with them?
Yeah, they get hurt. They get in a car accident. But they were already kind of fading even before then. I think that it's – a lot of people just got lost in the Austin and Michaels. Austin and Michaels kind of mix. You know, like them getting – like the title's getting elevated into the Hart Foundation storyline. I think burnt.
Right.
Because, you know, Bulldog and Owen were going to split. So one of those teams was going to get those belts early, right? I mean, they were going to split in feud. That was a storyline.
Probably Furnace and LaFon.
Right, them or the Headbangers were going to get those belts, or even Legion of Doom. Yeah. Whatever. One of those three teams is going to become champions. And then Brett makes the lobby and politics to turn heel and join up with the Hart Foundation and keep the belts. And that really takes the titles out of the tag division and puts them into the main event. And then they get all fucked up because of Sean's issues. And then Austin's injury, like the tag titles just get thrown into this mix of like constant being vacated and held up in tournament. You know, it's like it happens a couple of times and then they get kind of settled back in the tag division at the end of the year. So I wonder what would have been if Owen and Bulldogs broke up and we don't get the Hart Foundation, like who would have been champs and how that would have gone. But
right.
I think those teams, I think Furnace and LaFond got hurt by that. And then they get the car accident and then that sets them back. They come back to try the heel turn, kind of goes nowhere. And they just never really connected. They were a team that actually, you know, if they would have showed up in like 94, 95, the pair would have had more success.
I would have liked to see them fight the Steiners in 93.
Right, yeah, and if they come in there, they probably do a little bit better because there was such a dearth and they would have stood out so much. But right when they came in, it was like, even if they would have come in like mid-96, but they come in right at the end, right when Bulldog and Owen are getting going as a team.
Yeah.
And then, you know, right before the Headbangers and Legion of Doom and these other teams start coming in, so.
Yeah, and they're starting to really push, yeah, like – It's the heel Godwins, them, and the Blackjacks, really, right? And the Headbangers. So, yeah, it probably would have been them and the Headbangers for sure. And LOD, I guess. But you probably make LOD chase those titles. That's probably the play there.
That's what I think it would have been, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and like, I mean, even when you look at WrestleMania 13, like, I mean, I don't think it's the worst WrestleMania. I think it's really hurt by having the main event it has. I think the main, like, not that it's great top to bottom or anything, but I think that main event is like an all-time terrible main event. And that's from someone who loves Sid like as though he was my father, you know, like.
If Brett and Austin close, is that a different show?
Yes. And Sid and Undertaker get less time.
Right.
You need them to get, it's just too long. Although Sid powerbombing Bret Hart at the beginning is awesome and calling him a whiner.
I love it. Sean's like, Jesus Christ, when he comes back out at the end.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, look, the opening
tag
match.
If they go 12 minutes and if you switch spots on the card, Taker wins the belt in the middle, then you get the brawl, then you get Bret Austin.
It's fine.
Yeah, it's probably a different show.
Because, look, like, the opening match is not great, but it's fine. There's nothing really wrong with it. The Sultan Maivia stuff is pretty bad. The tag title match is okay. It just has a shitty end. They get counted out on the floor. What am I missing? Oh, Goldust Triple H. It's not – again, that's probably one of the better of their series.
Right.
So, like
– it's fine. Yeah, I know. Yeah. But, yeah, the main event doesn't help. and then also the – I also think it probably gets unfairly banged because it's such a hot time and people look at it as a disappointment, right? Like, I think WrestleMania 2000 is similar. Like, WrestleMania 2000 is, like, fine as a show. But because it's during like the hottest stretch in company history, arguably in the ring,
oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, shit. Like, it sucks that there was a kind of a middling WrestleMania during that stretch because it's such a great stretch.
Yeah, like, I'd much rather sit through 13 than 2000.
Right.
Like, I'd much. Now imagine this scenario too. Instead of that tag title match, they give you Mankind Vader.
Right, which was the original rumor. And then maybe you, instead of the four-way, you get Bulldog Owen versus, like, the Headbangers.
Sure. Or even put the Bulldog and Owen in the four, like, and replace the Blackjacks with them.
Right. Right. You could do that. And then the other thing that makes it better is Mark Mero doesn't get hurt. And
right.
You get Maivia Mero.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
For the IC title, which I think is ends up being pretty good. Yeah. Because Mero was really starting to get going in the ring when he got hurt.
Yeah, or even you save my – or you build Maivia to win the title from Triple H on the show.
Right, you could do that too.
Yeah, and then Goldust is off the card. I've been watching Goldust a lot lately, and I'm just not having it. I'm just not having any of it. Much maligned kind of card. And then – I mean, what's going on in the other show is going on in the other show, but, like, this feels like the first real pushback.
Right.
Which is important and interesting.
As far as, like, going against WCW, you mean?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, whereas before they were maybe counter-programming and such like that, now they're actually pushing back and trying to win as opposed to resting on their laurels.
Yeah, I mean, just getting the 2 hours from USA and going live and, you know, going to bigger arenas with the big set like that. I mean, that's just a huge strike back. I mean, it's just like now we're going to compete. Because before that, there's no fucking way they can compete doing the one night taping for 4 weeks in these tiny arenas with a little Raw set. Like, it just wasn't going to happen. They looked bush league compared to what Nitro was rolling out there.
Yeah.
And Nitro didn't even have, like, the big Tron or anything, but just the set they had and the bright, well-lit arenas and the pyro, you know, like, everything they had going on just looked way more major league than what Raw was doing.
Yeah.
Even in 95. Like, I'm watching the Raws and Nitros for the podcast, and it's like, Nitro feels unpredictable and stuff, and I'm watching Raw, and, like, the matches just feel like there's no stakes to them. Like, I watched, like, a decent Bulldog-Jannetty match tonight, and it's like, all right, Jannetty's not going to win this, and it's just, like, a standard Raw, like, a standard WWF taped match, you know, like you'd see on a Coliseum video or, like, a prime time. You know, it's just like, which was probably fine at the time, but then also you compare it to Nitro, and it's like, shit, they're rolling out Sabu, JL, putting each other through fucking tables, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, Macho Man's out there fighting with Sting and Luger or Hogan. Like, you guys, and then over here, we just have, it's just like the same old shit. Like, fine, their name guys fighting, but it just, there's not much excitement around it. So it's an interesting, you know, and then it takes them another year to get Pat. Like, it takes them a year to make the changes. Like, they're like that through all of 96. And there's good stuff in 96, but again, it's not like it is when they finally get going.
It's very similar to Raw today.
Right.
Like, it's just segment, like, and by the pay-per-view. Like, we're moving forward, and it doesn't matter what's happening now. It's what's happening later that's important. Which never works long-term, I don't think. But now they have no competition, so it doesn't matter. I think that's if we go, like, one night past WrestleMania, which I think is still in March, we get that amazing whole night of Bret Hart and Steve Austin.
Yes.
Which is awesome. They're fighting all over the building, and Bret Hart gets crippled.
No, that's later.
Well, that's later. You're right.
That's the night after Revenge of the Taker. So there are two more Raws in March right after that. I'm trying to see if anything really big happens. Ahmed beats Savio Vega. Ahmed challenges him. Oh, all right. So he challenges him to the gauntlet, which doesn't happen until. Oh, well, yeah. The next night has the Harfa Nation reunion. That's the big thing the next night with Brett coming out. And then that is that when him and Sean go at it too? Is that when he attacks him. He does the figure four.
Puts the figure four in the post.
Yeah. So that's the big stuff there. And then the next week you have, I lied. Sorry. So the night after, Bulldog and Owen fight the Headbangers and they argue and fight. It's the next week when Brett reunites them.
Oh, okay. Liar.
So it's 2 weeks after Mania.
You're just disappointing everyone with that lie.
I'm sorry. I fucked it all up. And then later the new Harfa Nation attacks Legion of Doom. That's where Rocky Maivia fights Brett. They put him in the figure four on the post. So anyway, the two good Raws. But the one you're thinking of is the
So yeah, after Revenge of Taker.
Yeah, the Johannesburg, South Africa is the go home for Revenge of the Taker. And that's the bottom way out.
Yeah.
And then the night after Taker, Revenge of the Taker is the wild one.
Right.
Watch his knee.
So of the first, first 3 months we're talking about.
The Johannesburg show has Savio versus Rocky Maivia in a non-title match that goes 18 minutes.
Oh, God. Savio Vega, no thank you.
Goldust and Sultan, 13 minutes.
Goldust, no thank you.
Ahmed Johnson and Crush, 11 and a half. Helmsley and Jesse James, 15 minutes.
What a terrible show. Why did they probably never went back to South Africa.
Well, that's
never Vince, invited back.
Vince, lost his fucking mind after that show.
Well, he booked it. His fault.
Yeah, I know. Well, I think that's when he realized he needed, that's when he finally gave in to Russo and said, okay, run with the show.
I'm booking Hunter Hearst Helmsley against Jesse James.
Going 15.
Take me behind the shed and blow my fucking brains out. Of this first quarter of 97 WWF, who's your MVP?
It's going to be Austin, right? I mean, he's the X factor in all of it. He's great at the Rumble.
He's a catalyst.
He's great at Final Four. He's great the night after Final Four when he attacks, one of my favorite moments is when he comes out and he's hobbling and he hits Brett with the chair and there's air horns going off in the arena.
Yeah.
And it's just such a great moment. And Sid wins the title. That's kind of a shock, when he beats Brett for the title the next night. And then we didn't even the promos leading up to 13 are so good. He's got the one where he's sick and he does it via satellite and he's wearing the big fucking hunter jacket on.
Yeah.
And he's just I'm sick as a dog, and that I don't want to wrestle you, Brett. That whole thing where he challenges him to submission match. That's an iconic promo interview. I don't remember which Raw that's on, but
I ain't bringing it. You talk about being screwed. I ain't bringing a condom to the ring. I'm bringing a hell of a can of whoop ass.
And it was the one before WrestleMania 2 where he's in the studio. That might have been 96, I think. I think it's 96.
Yes,
when he's in the studio and Brett's at home.
It's he's on Livewire.
Yeah, and he attacks the fucking guy after, and he's making faces as Brett's talking and everything like that.
Yeah.
He's just trolling Brett, basically. Brett's with his kid in front of the fucking fireplace. I think that may be 96.
Yeah.
But that's an iconic one. That's one of some of my favorite Austin stuff. But the real infamous one is early 97. That's one of his huge ones. It's right here. It's the Germany Raw. Steve Austin cuts an in-studio promo from Stanford. To recap his attack, why he's so bitter. Why are you so bitter? It's that's that whole So anyway, it's Austin. And Brett's probably a close two.
Yeah, 1A. Now, who's the person that is the anti-MVP?
Goldust is probably on the list. And I would say... I'm not ready to give it to Ahmed because he was still good here. He doesn't really get hurt or anything. He's
no,
good in the stretch.
Fine.
Farouk is in the conversation because he was real high up the card and he's just out of shape and his matches fucking suck.
It's terrible.
But he was his talking was good and the storyline was good, him and Ahmed. And Goldust is probably the guy that gets the most time that has the least return on his matches.
I maybe throw Rocky in there too.
Yeah.
In terms of both of them.
It's kind of unfair though. I mean, and him beating Hunter is a legit fun moment. The crowd pops pretty big when he wins.
Have you ever noticed that Farouk almost drops an N-bomb at WrestleMania?
Yeah. I think he did more than once.
when he's show him the black stick. and he's Ahmed Johnson, you big, dumb, stupid black boy, I almost said it. And then as he's saying that, right. Vince is cutting in, all right?
Let me say it. Yeah.
In 7 years, I'm going to say it.
All right, what's your favorite moment of that quarter?
Moment? I mean, it's probably Austin. No, probably Austin passing out in the sharpshooter.
Yeah.
What's
your favorite non-pay-per-view moment? What's your favorite TV moment?
Sid killing Pete Lothario. It's probably
mine's the cage. Mine's
no, mine is, yeah. Mine is more than likely Austin costing Brett the belt. I really love that.
In Nashville, that's great. God, the cage is so great. Where Austin cost, him and Taker are on the cage, both trying to help the other guy that they're fighting at Mania win.
Yeah,
and then
that
Brett
was the brilliance of it, right? Because you could conceivably see them switching the title match.
Right. Oh, yeah, for sure. I thought for sure they were doing it, right? You think it seemed obvious they were going to put the belt on Brett. So you got Taker out there, you know, trying to help Sid, and Austin's trying to help Brett. So it's kind of neat the way they did it. And then Brett, of course, is meltdown after, "You just hit Pat Patterson, that no good son of a bitch." You know, I want to give MVP nod to Vince, too. Like, I think early 97 might be his best stretch of commentary. Yeah. He is just, like, godlike at WrestleMania with the Brett Austin stuff. And he's really good throughout the whole year. Like, when Brett beats him up on that Raw, you know, he fucking attacks him and everything. Like, there's so much good stuff in there. And then, it's just it's such a good year. So I would say that, like you said, Brett costing that Austin promo is excellent.
The European title match.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah,
and we barely even touched the ECW invasion.
Right, that's another great moment too, right? That whole ECW Raw with Lawler and Paulie jabbing the whole time and, you know, Taz coming out and that's Sabu! You know, he dives off the fucking Raw letters and the Eliminator is hitting Total Elimination and the guy setting up the ring. Like, that was awesome.
See, for me, that, because I had been reading what helped get me back into wrestling in 96 was reading Pro Wrestling Illustrated. Mm-hmm. And they were constantly talking about ECW, but I had never seen anything.
Right.
So these guys showing up on the show to me was just phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like, it was so cool and fun, and they just looked so legit. Like, even Taz, who was small, you know, like.
Right. Yeah, no, and Paul Lee was awesome on commentary, really putting everything over. And then you get the fucking Taker Farouk main event. It just feels like so fucking blah.
Oh, yeah.
After that. But the Legion of Doom return is great, too. And I still don't understand that. They go to a double count out the Headbangers. What the fuck is the point of that? I guess good for the Headbangers, protecting them. But why are you having the LOD make this big return and they go to a double count out is beyond me. And early in the show, they open with the Blackjacks and the Godwins. Why not have the LOD fight like one of those teams? You know what I mean? It made no sense.
Yeah, and it's later the LOD breaks Henry Godwin's neck, right?
Yeah, that's like later in April, I think.
And then in 98, like they go out of their way to try and break their neck.
That's late 97.
Is it? Were you using the spike pile drive? Yes, you're right, it is. Love that.
All right, so we went a long time, as we figured, but we get through the whole quarter.
Yeah, we got through one half of the quarter.
Yeah, we didn't talk WCW. So next time we do 97, we're going to do the first quarter WCW, and then we'll see if we can get into the second quarter. But that was a ton of fun. I really enjoyed reliving that. It was a lot of cool memories. This one, like I said, one of my favorite years. Clearly, there's a ton to talk about. So, all right, why don't we take a break? When we get back, we're going to do some pop culture. What you thinking about that?
I think I like it.
Okay.
My friend keep telling me about things going on. But deep in my heart, babe, I hope that I'm wrong.
Police Foundation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PoliceFoundation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place of a Nation Wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcast, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talkin' Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead,
as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans
with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Mirror, mirror on the wall, tell me, mirror, what is wrong? Can it be my daylight clothes or is it?
Okay, we're back. Episode 4 of the No Holds Barred podcast. We talked a ton of wrestling so far, and so why don't we mix things up? Talk a little pop culture, and we kind of have a little ditty going on at PlayStation.com right now. It's on fire. It's a ton of fun, and it is the Greatest Song of the 80s tournament. Of course, if you remember, what, four-ish years ago, we did a Greatest Song of the 90s tournament, and we decided to do 80s this time around.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a lot of fun. There's been a lot of great discussion, a lot of good conversation and arguing each and every day. If you're a fan of music, if you're a fan of tournaments, voting, any of it, it's worth checking out. We have three polls that drop every day, and there are 10 songs in each poll. You pick five to move on in round one. We have 650 songs total from the 80s are in this tournament. And like I say every time, Aaron, it's about the journey. It's about the process. So watch the videos. Enjoy the conversation. You know, we'll get to the finals. We know there's probably 10 favorites. But whatever, part of it is like remembering, oh, this song did, or this artist did this song, or this video. There's so many good videos in the 80s, and those are all in each of these posts. So check out the tournament each and every day. And as part of our, or as our pop culture segment tonight, we wanted to actually talk 80s music. And we figured it was a good tie-in. We could talk about the tournament, Aaron. We could talk about music in general. So anything you wanted to start with as a topic?
Well, I was just curious as to what, like, what is your fandom of 80s music? And I can tell you guys a little bit about mine so we know where our starting points are for both of us.
Okay. So, it's tough because obviously I feel like I'm a music guy, but I didn't really become like sharp to popular music until the early 90s. For a long time, I mean, my dad is just like a diehard, like oldies, doo-wop, 50s, 60s fan.
Right.
So, like, most of my childhood was listening to that, you know, like, listening to B101 was the local channel here. He had, like, a solid gold oldies cassette set, you know, that we'd listen to. So, like, it was a lot of, like, I just, growing up was a ton of just 50s and 60s for me. So, I knew, like, all the Motown, like, just all that shit. And my mom was very light rock, you know, which is ironic because soft rock now.
Right.
Rock. But at the time, she was very into light rock. So there was some popular stuff there. But I can't say in the 80s, I was like an 80s music fan. Like, I wasn't super into Prince or Madonna or on an, you know, like, it wasn't on my radar. Or at least I don't remember it being. Like, I don't remember music until a little bit later. When, like, my cousins were super into New Kids on the Block. My mom was like into like the current Michael Jackson, like Michael Bolton, like stuff like that. And then like eventually as I got a little bit older, like seventh grade, and I'd start hanging out more and more with friends. Like I'd have friends that were super into MTV and like, so that's really when it started to get more into my life, into my radar, like Salt and Pepper, you know, like that era is what
sure.
really hit. So I kind of missed like my older sister was super into like hair bands and shit. So, like, I vaguely remember, and, like, I remember hearing, like, Metallica and Def Leppard and stuff like that from her, but I can't say, like, oh, I lived for this music before. Like, it wasn't until probably age, like, 12 when I kind of became my own purveyor of my own music. Up until then, it was just kind of whatever was on in the house or a car.
Right. See, for me, I was always into Michael Jackson as a kid. So much so, I went as Halloween one year. Michael Jackson, my dad followed me around with a boombox playing music, which was cool. And I distinctly remember when my dad bought the first CD player he bought. When he went to buy it, I begged him to buy me Thriller because I wanted to hear Beat It. I begged and begged and begged and begged, and I think I was 5 or 6, and he wouldn't buy it for me. So I was crying, and like I was throwing not a fit, but I was really sad. And that day we went home, and he said, "I want you to listen to something," and I didn't want to listen to anything he wanted to play. Right, like I just didn't want anything to do with his CD player because he didn't buy me Michael Jackson. And he starts this song, and I start freaking out. Like I don't want to hear this and stuff like that. But then it kicks in and it's Beat It. Like I just never heard the beginning of it before, so all that fit had been for nothing. And so I like that. I was like you too. My dad was an oldies guy as well, although he has an awful lot of Village People records, which. I mean, I like them too. They're great. They like singing about their gym, about going west. Like, there's a lot of positive messages in the Village People. But my mom was a rock person. Like, I started going through her tapes, and I discovered Bon Jovi in her tapes, mm-hmm. and I discovered Def Leppard in her tapes. And Def Leppard was my favorite band forever. Like, she actually took me. My first concert ever was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Pizza Power Tour from Pizza Hut. But the second one, when I was 12, was Def Leppard. So I was always kind of a fan of that kind of music. But I did not enjoy I did not enjoy 90s music at the time. I like it now, mm-hmm. but I didn't enjoy it then. So it actually put me off music for many years. Once I got to my 20s, I started listening to 80s stuff again, and I got really deep into it. And it's exactly my wheelhouse. Like, whereas, like, I feel you were very at ease with the 90s stuff when we were doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for me, this is like when I heard we were doing it, I was like, oh, great. Like, finally. Like, I can partake in this conversation. Like, I don't have to listen to all the songs in each category every day. Like, I know most of them. So that's kind of where I'm coming from with it.
Yeah, and it's kind of flipped for me, right? So in the 90s, I knew pretty much every song. And now, like, I may know the song, but I don't know by title and artist, right? If I hear it, I may be like, oh, that's that song. But, yeah. Doesn't mean I don't like them, but that's just where I'm at, too.
Yeah, and I mean, 80s, it is actually what I listen to more than anything else.
Right.
Like, still to this day. Because it's the best, all right? It's just the best. It's just – that's fact, okay?
Well, it's funny because since this tournament process began, I've been more and more into the 80s stuff.
Right.
Like, I find myself on Sirius, whereas I was always pretty much 90s fly yacht rock. Over the last month, been stopping on the 80s channel and listening more. I think it's just the mood I've been put in by this tournament. And a lot of it, I don't call it new to me, but it's fresher to me.
Well, of course, because it's not part of your general rotation.
Right, which is funny, because the bigger songs I'm kind of done with, though. And I find myself voting accordingly. Not like the big songs, but like ones that I heard like a ton. Like, all right, so when you go back into the 80s, right, like at the end of the 90s and early 2000s, it was kind of the songs that were almost like, I don't call them nostalgic, but like Mickey, right? I mean, like, there's the songs they almost started playing as like a gimmick, right? Like, it dances and stuff. Like, oh, we're going to play some 80s music. Here's Mickey, you know, like, you know, and shit like that.
Here's Karma Chameleon.
Right. Like, you know, so those are the songs, like, and like, if I never hear like Sweet Emotion again, like, I'm kind of good, you know?
Yeah.
like, I'm okay with that. And so there's like a bunch of those songs. So or even like Welcome to the Jungle. Like, I've just heard it so many fucking times. Like, I'm kind of good. Because I think part of it goes when I first, like, when I was able to just get my own music at any time, you know, like Napster, or in college we had like the college sharing where you could just like put your library on like the college network and you could just download whoever's music you wanted if it was on the open network. And I would just put these tapes together and just wear them out of my car, right? And but those are the songs. Like, everyone has had those songs. Like, Welcome to the Jungle and this and that. Like, just kind of the name songs. So, like, I'm kind of burnt on those. And I think I started kind of conflating those with 80s music, right? So I'm kind of like, oh, I'm all set with 80s music because I don't want to hear fucking, you know, Sweet Emotion again. Like, you know, We Got the Beat by the Go-Go's. Like, I've heard that now. It was kind of goofy and, all right, it's funny in 2000. Like, oh, We Got the Beat. Yeah, remember that? Like, so it's like I'm kind of done with that.
Right.
But it's been fun rediscovering some of the other stuff through this process.
Yeah, and there really is a lot to discover because there's so many different styles of music that were big there. Like, you've got the rock, you've got the hard rock, you've got the beginnings of like real – I mean, not the beginnings, but you're starting to get into the heavier metal. You get the hair metal, You got the new wave stuff. You got the you got the beginnings of some more hip hop stuff. Like right. there's a lot of a lot of really cool. There's something for everyone in the 80s, which is really interesting. I didn't feel that as much in the 90s. Like if you're not into grunge or hip hop, like yeah, there's rock, but it doesn't connect as much, at least for me anyway.
Right.
I think what also helps me with the 80s is when I started getting into the 80s and the early 2000s, I started going to a lot of shows.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really cool is for the most part, a lot of these guys can still go. Like they're you go to their shows even today and like maybe the singer's not quite as good as he used to be, but the band is just as good and they're just right. as fun. And like, and so now like since the early 2000s, I've probably been to, I don't know, at least over 100 shows of like, you know, seeing Bon Jovi, seeing Motley Crue, seeing Def Leppard, Journey, Poison. Like, you know, you've got a list that you're trying to work down and see, like, for me anyway, it's like trying to get to see everybody before they die, basically. Like,
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, seeing these people in concert, too, only enhances
mm-hmm.
how talented they are. Like, in comparison, a lot of the, like, I don't want to sound like an old fart. It's like, well, they don't even play instruments anymore. But, like, there's just something about that era of music that was a complete package mm-hmm. without it feeling too artificial.
Yeah, no, it was. Because it's got the mix of, like you said, the instruments, the performance aspect of it. the genre split is there. It was – excuse me. The genre splits are split, but it's not as like it's not as dramatic as you'd get in the 90s and 2000s, where the 90s is very dramatic, like hip-hop, rap, slow rock, yeah. hard rock, alternative. You know, like it's all very, very split versus like the kind of talent. Whereas in the 80s, it felt very much more I don't know. Is what I'm saying make sense? Like it all felt very yeah. much closer to each other, right? It was just all great music. Like it wasn't as much – maybe because I wasn't as into it. I didn't feel it as much. But I feel like Madonna fans weren't as like angry about Run DMC. Versus in the 90s, like if you're a rap fan, you maybe weren't like an alternative fan. You hated it. You know what I mean? Or whatever. Like I feel like that maybe wasn't as dramatic in the 80s. But again, maybe I just didn't live it. The funny thing with me is as far as live music – is I haven't been to a ton. And I don't know if it's my parents were just never big concert people.
Right.
And this sounds like this is the most Rhode Island fucking thing ever, but like going to Providence for shows like wasn't on their radar. Like I had to like really push to go to like wrestling, you know, right. at the Providence Civic Center. Like now it's like nothing. It's like whatever, 20 minutes I'm driving in. You know, I do it all the time. At that point, for whatever reason, it just wasn't something like they were open to doing, and they just weren't like live music people. So I didn't mm-hmm. go. Like my first concert was, I mean, I guess like I'll count like my freshman year of college. I helped set up for, I think it was Mo was like the band. And like, I think I went for a bit.
Was Mabel also there?
Sadly, not just Oscar. But the first like concert I bought tickets to and went was Kenny Rogers in 1999.
You got to know when to hold him, you know?
Yeah, well, I should have folded him. But no, he was actually really good. But that tell I mean, I was 18 when I went to my first concert. Like, I'd been to a lot of wrestling shows and sports
sure.
games. But for whatever reason, like, live music just wasn't – it always was kind of third in priority, I guess. And I think a lot of it had to do with just, like, the – like, I had friends that were going all the time downtown to Providence, like, the place Lupo's. That's pretty well known for live music. And it just – I don't know. I just think I grew up, like, just a touch too sheltered for it.
Right.
I grew up separated from a lot of my elementary school friends because I didn't live – my parents lied. Like, I went to a – well, actually, I went to a Catholic school because our local schools were trash, and it was near where my mom worked. So it was, you know, multiple towns away, and they all lived, like, in that area, and I was further out. And, again, it's very Rhode Island. When you boil it down, it's like 15, 20 minutes. But, you know, when you're kids, you don't have an easy way to get there. It's not like – I didn't have a ton of friends in the neighborhood. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I was, like, separated from all that. So I was just reliant completely on, you know, either getting picked up out of the way or getting driven to go. And my parents, I'm not saying they didn't do shit for me, but like that was low priority. So
yeah, of course.
Long-winded way of saying, I think music was deprioritized in a way to me because I also didn't go to like live shows. I didn't see live bands. Like, so
yeah,
it was a thing that existed that I was into, especially like come, you know, 94, 95, like I got super into it, especially like rap and hip hop.
Sure.
You know, really, really into it. But before that, it just was always kind of behind like wrestling and sports and movies and TV. It just was kind of like fifth or sixth until that point.
Yeah, I mean, I would say like if there's a band that you like moderately enjoy, mm-hmm. going to the concert generally will do nothing but incredibly enhance how much you like them.
Right.
And like, even if it's like, you know, sometimes you're afraid to go because I don't know any of the music or, you know, I don't know any of the words. I know like one or two songs, but I can't tell you how many shows I've gone to where I'm like, I don't really know them that well. Okay, but I'll go. And then I end up liking them like infinitely more after remembering how good that performance was. And you got to remember, I'm seeing them like well past their prime and they're still awesome kind of thing.
I did see Red Hot Chili Peppers probably about a decade ago. I want to say that might be like the biggest band I've seen. I see Maroon 5 as well. But I want to say Chili Peppers are probably like the biggest band I've seen as far as like famous bands go.
I think I've seen a lot of them. I've seen Bon Jovi a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And Bon Jovi puts on a really good show. Like, I mean, the show is quite good. And by now he's not singing a lot of new songs, which is good. He's right. just singing old stuff. I saw him at there's this a little island they have outside Montreal called Île Sainte-Hélène, and he had an outdoor show with like 50,000 people, and that was just crazy. It was his greatest hits concert, you know. So like I've seen quite a few of them. Like the big ones I'm missing that I really want to see are Aerosmith, and not 80s, but Green Day. Those are the kind of missing mm-hmm. ones. I mean, I thought about Billy Joel for a while, but then the way you guys were trashing him in the chat the other day.
Actually, I guess, like, would you consider them bigger than Chili Pepper? I've seen Billy and Elton. I saw them together.
Yes. Yeah, they're bigger.
Okay. So that's probably the biggest I've seen. I saw them.
You saw them together? If they're together, they're way bigger.
Yeah, I saw them together. When they were doing that tour, and like it was my senior year of college, so 2002.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. So that out of the way, like, off the top of your head, who are your favorites? Like, I don't mean your personal favorites, but who are your favorites to win this thing? Who are, because I know there's some obvious ones, yeah. but are there any dark horses too that you think, you know, if people get behind it, maybe a chance?
I mentioned it with, I think, maybe Scott and Chad. I think Back in Black has a shot of being a dark horse. Just knowing the demographic of our group.
Right.
Very, like, kind of hair metal, like AC/DC kind of seems to be in the wheelhouse. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I think like that could be like a sleeper. I don't think Beastie Boys, I want to say them maybe, but I don't think they have enough. I think Billy Joel's got a lot of anti stuff going on right now, so I don't think that happens.
Billy Joel hate group.
You think Bon Jovi has a shot?
Well, I think.
You think Living on a Prayer?
I think Living on a Prayer is probably the song that like encapsulates the 80s best.
Right.
Like, it's just such an iconic song.
See, that's another one I burnt out on. That was, you'd go to any bar in the 2000s, and that was, like, the cool 80s song that, you know, everyone, and I'm sure they still fucking probably play it.
But it's legitimately a really good song.
Of course it is, but I've just heard it so many fucking times. And then, I'm sorry, but the Jovi tie-in with fucking Belichick and the stupid-ass Patriots has, like, ruined that for me, so.
See, I don't know anything about that, so.
Yeah, no fucking voice.
Yeah, Living on a Prayer is one that kind of jumps out at me. I mean, I don't think it will win, but I mean, if it did, it wouldn't surprise me at all because, like, it's such a quintessential 80s song.
How about Pour Some Sugar on Me?
I think that's a step below. Mm-hmm. Like, as much as I like Def Leppard, Def Leppard is a band where the singer's just done.
Right.
Like, I've seen him lately. I mean, look, I think the clear favorites are – I think that for me, the clear favorite is Thriller.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably – or maybe Beat It. It's one of those two that's going right. to – kind of go. Another big one that I think could be really interesting is Don't Stop Believing.
Yes, I think that's like the, you know, if you're putting odds on them, like,
yeah.
Jackson's like 2-1, whatever, you know, like Don't Stop Believing is like the 8-1, like kind of the good bet, like,
yeah.
you know, because it could win and it's realistic, but you get some good decent odds on it.
Yeah, like, and it had that renaissance in the mid-2000s with the Glee stuff and everybody covering it. And
right, oh yeah, the Scott singing at every fucking wedding, yep.
But you also can't discount like the Madonna stuff.
Right. Well, actually, I was going to ask you, what about the triumvirate of Guns N' Roses? Paradise City, Sweet Child of Mine, Welcome to the Jungle.
I could see them doing really well. I wouldn't vote for them ahead of like the songs we're talking about now.
Right. What's the best bet of those three?
Jungle, I think.
Jungle, okay.
I would imagine jungle. That makes the most sense to me. Now, what do you think of a sleeper like Eye of the Tiger?
Yeah, that was one I had named. I think with me and Chad when we talked about it, I do think that's another legit chance. I think it's got the Rocky backing. It's a great, knowledgeable song. And if you get people that are not – I mean, I think everyone pretty much is probably into Michael. I think it depends on the path of a lot of these. You know what I mean? Like if the Michael Jackson songs consume themselves somehow – right, yeah. Like Thriller could get up against Bad or Beat It or whatever, and all of a sudden one of those or two of those drops out, and you're talking a final four of, you know, Bon Jovi, Welcome to the Jungle, Eye of the Tiger, and like Thriller. Like, I don't know. Yeah, I think it's got a shot. Like, I think,
yeah,
you know, like, I don't think anyone would have thought Enter Sandman was going to win the '90s, right? But all of a sudden it got to the finals, and that's where it was. So
yeah, against Everlong, yeah.
Right.
Of all songs.
Right. So Teen Spirit didn't even make the finals. You know what I mean? So it's like, and that's usually like the given best song of the '90s, right? That's the one everyone always, right. the countdowns and the lists always talk about. I mean, Madonna's interesting. What do you think's her best bet? Like a Virgin or Material Girl?
Material Girl.
Yeah.
Or is Like a Prayer 80s?
It is. It's in there.
That might be one too, because that's just a really good song also. Right. Like, not that Material Girl isn't, but I find Like a Prayer has a bit more, like, a better musical pedigree to it. It just sounds like a better song. And what happens with all the quintessential, like, Hair songs? Like,
correct.
Like, what happens Crazy to, like, We're Not Gonna Take It has one of the greatest videos of all time.
Yeah.
Right? Here I Go Again by Whitesnake, another, like, iconic video. That's just one of the things that's cool about this, is watching all the videos, right?
It depends too what people are prioritizing. Are they factoring in the video? Are they factoring in, I think someone has asked us in the live chat today, is it your favorite song? Is it the most impactful song? It's right back to the GWE thing, right?
So
it's
right.
Is it the biggest song of the 80s? Is it your favorite song of the 80s?
If you don't give people clear guidelines, they're not going to do anything. That's why they're not voting, right?
They're voting. It's a very popular tournament.
Yes.
So yeah, I mean, that's what it comes down to too. And it's like, how much of a stigma? Like, I think you can make a fucking argument for, like, New Kids on the Block. Like, Hangin' Tough was fucking huge, and, like, it's a good song. But I think you're going to get the stigma of, like, oh, I'm not going to vote for New Kids on the Block. You know, so it's like, I think our demographic probably will skew away from a song like that. But I think if it's in the right group, if you had, you know, a different set of voters, like, that could definitely be, like, a dark horse contender. Like, that's a huge song. Hit Me With Your Best Shot, Pat Benatar. I mean, I feel like that's a pretty famous 80s song, too.
Or something like Don't You Forget About Me.
Right, exactly.
No, completely different style, but like, what's more 80s than that?
We haven't mentioned Purple Rain either.
Yeah. Roman Reigns, Roman Reigns.
I do sing that in my head every time.
I know, me too.
In Kevin's voice, angrily.
What do you think song won't win?
Say it again.
The best song in the tournament that won't win.
Ghostbusters.
Yeah, it won't win.
I love Ghostbusters. Under Pressure?
That's exactly what I would have said.
Yeah.
Like, such an amazing song, but I don't think it gets associated with the 80s enough for it to win.
Right.
But it might be the best song in the tournament.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you get the REO Speedwagon songs that are fucking great too, right?
Yeah.
Can't Fight the Feeling, keep on loving, you.
Loving like, you,
those are great songs. Oh, there's so many. And even Walk This Way, I mean, like, that's,
you know. Oh, that's a really important song too, because not only did that help our Run DMC, it brought Aerosmith back from the brink,
right?
And like, what do you do with all the Van Halen, like, 19 Jump by Van Halen?
That's another one I'm sick of.
Yeah, but it's such a, again, it's one of those iconic 80s, like,
yeah.
It wouldn't have been made in any other decade.
Not. Right. I had another one in my mind. I just lost it. But yeah, I don't know where it went. Tom Sawyer.
Are you talking about Rush?
Yeah.
Yeah. I also, a great song that I don't feel too many people know, but I was talking about it in the group chat the last couple of days, is Don't Change by NXS.
Mm-hmm.
Just awesome. Like, just a tremendous piece of music.
All right, so three other ones we haven't talked about I'd put up there. What's Love Got to Do with It?
Oh, yeah, Tina.
Free Fallin'.
Yep.
And Africa we haven't talked about.
you want to, here's the thing with Africa, right? One of the lyrics in Africa is, as sure as Kilimanjaro rises like Olympus above the Serengeti, right?
Yeah, yes.
So number one, he worked Kilimanjaro into the song, which is, I mean, it makes it great for that. But number two, it's a simile. He's comparing a mountain to a mountain, which always makes me laugh. Like, it's like Kilimanjaro is Olympus. Like, they're both mountains.
But it's the Olympus of the Serengeti.
I guess, but yes, that's exactly what it is. Like, you don't need to say that.
Africa's interesting because I've actually had a few people say to me, like, yeah, it's going to be Africa. You know, like, all right,
oh, yeah,
have fun, but it's going to be Africa. Like, more than one person has been resigned that Africa's winning. And I don't think it is.
No, I'd be surprised if Africa won. I don't even think it's Toto's best song.
Like
Hold the Line's a better song. I like Hold the Line a lot more.
Yeah, I like Hold the Line.
But that's not in the 80s.
And I think Rosanna's better, and that's me.
Oh, Rosanna's very good too.
And the last one I would say would maybe I Want to Dance with Somebody, Whitney Houston. Could be like,
oh,
a real,
yeah, band. That's great.
Yeah. And I think that's like a big resurgence that, like, because of weddings. Like it's every wedding I've been in, yeah, like the last like 3 or 4 years it's played. So I do think that has a shot.
Yeah, I'd like to think that All Night Long would have a shot too. But
yeah, I was going to mention that. Yeah.
Deepa deepa da ba do da. Hey.
If we did this like 10 years ago when it was that commercial that played during the whole baseball playoffs, the it was like a cell phone or some fucking ad, and they legit played it every fucking break, and then it was. Was it a cell phone? Because then the next year was Meet Me Halfway by Black Eyed Peas was like the official baseball playoff song.
Okay.
It was in every fucking commercial break of every game. Meet Me Halfway. Anyway.
Chumba chumba.
My point is All Night Long was like huge during that one year. So.
Yeah. So look, so many great songs to vote on.
Mm-hmm.
So much fun stuff to do and to discover. You'll discover the craziest music videos too. I forget the one that I discovered the other day. I think it was called What Is Love or something like that. It was just madness.
Yeah. There's a ton. And I made sure when I built these, like every post has for the video clips, it's always the music video or a live performance. Like, I don't think I had to resort to maybe one. I had like one or two. I had to resort to just like the song over like the album cover on YouTube. But every other one is either the video or a live version of the song if there was no video. So,
right. Yeah, it's totally worth your time to watch them. Even if you know the song, you might not know the video, and it really is half the fun here.
And I even get to sneak in some Yacht Rock favorites. Little Benny Mardonis is in there. Boz Scaggs is in there. Little Loggins. Although the best Loggins is 70s, which is – this is it. It's the best Loggins song.
Right.
So when we do the greatest song of the 70s, that'll win.
We're going to have a hard time getting participation on that one.
Walking on Sunshine is another one I don't need to hear ever again. I'm good.
Oh man, there was a DJ that I used to go to, and it's a karaoke place I used to go to, and he would just fucking play that song nonstop.
Ugh.
But it was right after Hurricane Katrina.
Oh Jesus!
This Katrina and the Waves, right?
Yeah, you probably even know who the fuck sang it. But that was another one. Like, I'm just picturing like being in college. What were the big songs that played at like dances? Like, it was like those top dozen 80 songs you just hear everywhere. And again, it was the same ones that were on the tapes and everything. You know, it's just, that was one of them. It was just like the resurgent songs when the nostalgia wave of the 80s hit, like around 2000. And it happened with wrestling too. Like all of a sudden, like 80s wrestling and 80s cult. I remember 80s websites just popping up like crazy, like my junior year of college. Like all of a sudden, like remembering cartoons from the 80s and shows from the 80s. Like
the toys.
We take that shit for granted now because it like nerd, like pop culture nostalgia is like such a big part of our culture. But in the 90s and early 2000s, like it really wasn't. Like it wasn't until around 2000-ish is when we all, our big pop culture group turned 2021 that we all kind of fell back in love with all that. And so like we were all, you know, it goes in hand with the wrestling, right? Like
sure.
As a kid, you kind of fell out of it for a lot of people. And then all of a sudden it's cool again in the 90s and you can like it again. So a lot of the nostalgia happened that we got bitter in our teenage years, and all of a sudden we're 20 and we want to go back to being a kid. A lot of the 80s nostalgia started really popping up during that time, and a lot of these songs kind of made a bounce back as well.
And just to put a capper on that, I would say that like when you go to a concert of these bands that you grew up with or that have that kind of style of music that encapsulates that time period, you really do feel like a kid again. And I think that's a real part of the experience of going there and just living that.
I agree.
Yeah.
All right. So make sure you vote each and every day. Those polls are going up. We really love your participation. It's been great so far, and the conversation has been great. You can talk to us all about it on social media. We also have a really big week written content-wise. So Tyler Kelly was back this week with a new House of Fire. He's looking at some teams for the GWWE Tag Team Project as well, and he actually touched on DIY as well. So check that out. Our buddy Callum McDougall wrapped up his World Cup coverage with this kind of a look back at the entire tournament. And then coming this week, we have some really good stuff as well I wanted to talk about. So Stacey Loughlin's newest piece on her Diva Deep Dive, looking back at the 2000s pre-Women's Revolution. Women's Wrestling hits on Wednesday afternoon. And her piece last week on Molly Holly was tremendous. I don't know if you got a chance to read that, Aaron, but I
did.
It was really, really good.
I liked it a lot.
And this week she's looking at Melina. So
Melina's interesting.
Yeah, that'll hit. And also a really good piece coming up later this week by Andy Atherton, looking at why he still loves wrestling. It kind of talks about taking his kids to house shows and their experience. Jacob Williams' Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling Series will continue as well this week. And, of course, on top of that, all tournament, our Seinfeld stuff is still rolling along, Aaron. Very proud of that. We had a really good one. We had the Merv Griffin drop last week, so that was exciting.
Yeah, finally a good episode.
Right. So, we'll see. So the new one should be out maybe this week or early next week. We'll be on that. And, of course, in all the podcasts as well. Scott and I had a new place to be with Jennifer Smith that hit last week. She was great in her debut on the show. Appreciated that. And then she made the rounds. Chad compared her to Conrad. She was on a Survey Says over the weekend as well. So be sure to check out her on all of those. Chad and I also did Wrestling Warzone on In Your House 4. That was interesting to talk about as well. Anything you got going on you want to plug besides this?
No.
Okay, very good.
I'm going to write something at some point about something.
Yeah, also, I didn't want to overlook Greg Phillips' piece.
The draft piece.
Yeah, that was great too. He looked on the 2-year anniversary of the brand split. He looked at kind of the winners and losers. And that was really good too. So I've been really proud. Our written content's been really good over the last month or so. And that's going to continue on. So be sure to check all that out. Some real kind of prestige type pieces have been dropping. So, all right, why don't we quickly move through our top five, our sudden death round, Aaron. This is what I randomly threw out there, and I thought it'd be kind of fun to talk about because it's kind of off the beaten path. And that is our top five favorite hats. Yes, hats. And these are – I went with hats I've owned. Did you do hats you've owned?
Yes, worn.
Okay, very good. So I've been a hat wearer pretty much all my life. I think as soon as I was born, the story goes that they had to use the clamp on my head there when pull me out. whatever it's called, not tweezers.
Forceps.
In my head, I kind of like a cone shaped head when I was born. And my dad was really upset because he was saying, how is he going to wear a baseball hat? And then my head's been fine. It's probably more round than it needs to be. So I've had a hat on pretty much since I was like 1 year old. So I've had tons and tons and tons of baseball hats, or caps, whatever you want to call them. So they kind of mean a lot to me. So, and I had like almost more than I could even whittle down to five, but I'm going to go with five. No honorable mentions. I kept it at five, that I want to talk about. And this would be a cool topic. I was trying to think of something completely different, not pop culture or wrestling related. So, all right, what's your number five hat?
My number five hat is the hat that I wear all the time now because I often have long hair for roles and stuff, so I can't always wear a hat. So whenever I cut my hair, which I just recently did, I buy a new hat. And at the beginning of the summer, I bought a Las Vegas Golden Knights hat.
Nice.
And it's really nice. It's black. It's got just the gold logo that looks like the Spartan helmet on the front. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those like form fit ones, like that kind of stretches a bit, so it's comfortable. It's dark. It goes with everything. I'm digging it, and I can't find it right now. It's in my house somewhere, but I will find it, and I will wear it some more.
I think you're going to say Las Vegas Outlaws, because that's a hat I have from the original XFL. Yeah.
So. All
right, my number five, shout-out to my boys, Chad and Nick, was an Atlanta Falcons hat I had in the early 90s. It was the old-school, like, if you picture, like, iced tea or Easy, like that style of hat. Like, it was the all black. It just had, you know, Atlanta Falcons written like in cursive writing with like the line on top, and you know, just like the old school fucking baseball hat from like the early 90s. And the Falcons were not very good at that point, but my dad had gone on a trip to Atlanta and got it for me. And I just wore the shit out of it. It was like such a cool looking hat. I felt like it was kind of like the first like kind of cool hat I had, like kind of first non-Yankee hat. So I always loved that Falcons hat. I don't know what happened to it. It vanished. I had a Bears one too that actually I had found like not that long ago. It was the same style. I just had the Bears and the cursive.
Right.
Now, so, yeah.
Do you curve your brim or do you leave it flat?
I used to curve at that point. Not like a hard curve, but I'd curve it. Now I do, because I've been buying more of like the snapbacks.
Okay.
So I have like a bull. So these aren't, one of them's on my list. So I have a bull snapback and then like a jet snapback, and those I leave straight brim.
See, I can't leave anything straight brim.
No, I get used to it. I get used to it pretty quick. But I only with those. Like fitted, it's kind of harder, but the old school snapback, it's easier.
Yeah, I don't feel cool enough to do that.
Yeah, well, you're probably not.
No, I'm not. I mean, you shouldn't be either. You're a father of two. You know, like, you're not cool either. Let's not
mention it. I am going to have my fucking flat brim snapback on, bitch. All right. My number four is another kind of a weird one. But it was another one that my dad had gotten on a trip. He went for a softball tournament in Mississippi. It was a Mississippi State Bulldogs hat, and I loved the fuck out of this thing. It was white, and it had, like, the, like, maroonish writing on it. And it fit perfect. It was like, it just looked good. And I wore it a lot in college. And I've always thought back to where did it go? And I'm pretty sure my ex-girlfriend has it. Like, I think it was in her room or something. And then we broke up. I just never got it back. And because I don't remember it post like junior year, but God, I loved that fucking hat. I wore it constantly all over the place. Just for years. And then I ended up transitioning to a visor the last year and a half of college, which I'm going to bring back someday. I'm going to bring the visor back.
Would you be interested in getting together with me and performing a heist to get that hat back?
It's probably in a trash dump somewhere, but yeah.
Well, no, we'll just break into her house and, you know, whatever happens in there happens, right?
You know, it's weird. Like, we live – like, Rhode Island's so tiny, I've never run into her. Isn't it weird? Like, we both live in Rhode Island. I'm pretty sure she's still in Rhode Island. It's odd.
She's probably just avoiding you out of hatred.
Yeah, maybe.
It's possible.
She did throw a beer on me, like, at a bar in senior year.
What did you do?
Nothing. I was just like, whatever. I mean, I was a okay. Dick, so.
Yeah, you did something to get a beer. My number.
Megan might have gotten most of the beer on her. It was either her. I got some.
Oh, man. Like, I've never had a beer thrown at me. I just get psychologically abused for years.
Yeah.
So, like, it hurts more. It cuts deeper, you know.
Right.
Causes me a lot more problems. My number four is when I was a teenager. I have never been into college sports. I don't understand it. I don't understand why you people like it. I don't get it at all. But I fell in love with this hat that I had to have. It was all green for the most part, and it was a Notre Dame Fighting Irish hat with the logo. But the logo was like it wasn't a small logo in the front. It was like imagine the logo plastered all over the cap.
Right.
So like the whole cap part is the logo with like a little bit at the bottom knot.
I
loved it. I loved it so much. I'm sure it was awful. Like thinking about it, it sounds awful.
I had a Jets one like that where the logo was like all over the hat. Like did you get that like in the late 90s?
Mid to late, yeah.
Yeah, that's a mid to late 90s style right there when they had the logo all this plastered on the hat.
Hey, how do you feel? I mean, maybe this is going to come up. How do you feel about hats for sports teams that aren't the color of the sports teams?
Yeah, I'm not like a huge fan.
Like a red Yankees cap. How
yeah,
would that make
no, I don't think that.
Yeah, I think that's just fucking blasphemy.
Yeah.
Because like here are the Habs hats, the Canadiens hats. They have them in every conceivable color under the sun.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. I get it, I guess, if people want to coordinate, but I'm not a huge fan.
No.
All right, what was number was that? Was it your four?
That was my four. My number three is a hat that my dad had as a kid that I loved to wear. It was a yellow, white, and brown hat. It had like that mesh over half the cap.
Yep.
With snapback. And the writing in the front said shithead, and on the brim was a giant piece of shit.
Okay.
And I just thought as a child that this was the funniest fucking thing I'd ever seen.
That's intense. Like,
yeah, yeah. And I wore it. I wore it. And I love that shithead hat. And I can be a shithead. So it works.
Yeah, it does. All right. My number three is my current hat. that I wear a ton. It's my flat brim snapback Providence Friars hat. I got it 2 years ago, and I got a matching one for my daughter. It was the first, like, kind of the first game I took her by myself, and we bought them together, like a match. So it's kind of like the first bonding hat I got. And I wear it a ton. It's an awesome hat. I've always wanted like a really good Friars hat. Like they have decent ones, but I never like found like a great one. And that one I just wear all the time. And now my son wears it sometimes when my daughter's not wearing it. And he loves putting it on. Like he'll make me wear it, so he'll wear his. And so it's kind of like a family bonding hat. So that's why that one's on my list. My number two is in the style that you just mentioned, the mesh back. But it's, I may have seen it in some pictures of me, but it's my Hartford Whalers hat.
I love the Whalers. Yeah.
And it's got like a beaten up look. Like the brim is like a little ripped, you know, it's got like the rip to it. It's green. The brim is green. It's got the Whalers logo in the middle on the front, and it's like faded now because I wear it like in the pool and in the ocean and stuff. Like it's kind of like my wear like out like beach pool kind of, if I'm going to be like sweating hat, you know what I mean? It's just kind of my throwaway hat, but it stayed, it, like it's held up really well. It fits perfectly. I think it looks really cool. Like just kind of the beaten up trucker look with the Whalers logo. It's like very 70s feeling.
Yeah.
So that's definitely one of my, well, obviously my number two all time. So.
Well, we have a hat that looks almost exactly like that mesh Whalers in the front, but Nikki, it's basically, it was mine, but Nikki took it. So it's hers now.
Bitch.
Yeah. Okay. I'm outraged. Clearly.
You're number two.
My number two, much like I'm not into college sports, I also know nothing about basketball. Mm-hmm. It's just not something that is on my radar at all. But during the 90s, I had a brief stint, and I bought a Seattle Supersonics hat.
Nice.
Like a black hat with a logo, green brim, and then like, you know, the little thing on top of the hat, little dot, also green. And I wore the shit out of that hat. I don't know why I loved it so much, but like – I just wore it and wore it and wore it and wore it and wore it. And it's probably the hat I've worn the most out of any hat I've ever had. And it's not even a team. I mean, I like Detlef Schrempf as much as the next guy, but like, I can't say I was a crazy supporter of the Seattle Supersonics based on how much I wore that hat.
All right. Your number one?
My number one is a Texas Rangers hat, baseball cap. I don't care about Texas Rangers, but it was converted into a cowl of the cowl of Cobra Commander. So, you know, that cloth cowl he would wear. So I basically have that. It's a Texas Rangers hat converted into that, but it looks like the cowl. And whenever I wear that thing, I feel absolutely invincible. Like I could do anything in that mask. And I have done many things in that mask. Not what you're thinking. All right. Not what you're thinking. Although, I won't go there. I remember once we did a show called Cobra Christ Superstar, which was like a G.I. Joe musical, but the second one. And to publicize it, we walked down one of the big shows carrying a giant cross. And we're talking as Cobra Commander, talking to people about Jesus. And I'm talking, Jesus is the Savior, like all that kind of stuff. And I distinctly remember this guy coming at a sports bar and saying, "Man, Jesus, fuck Jesus. He doesn't drive a BMW, so he doesn't know shit." That was the stupidest thing I've ever heard anyone say.
Yeah, they didn't have BMWs.
Yeah, I know, right? But that hat, that mask has given me so many awesome memories, and I don't know. It's just great. I know it's a cheat, but it's my favorite.
All right, so I'm going to name a couple honorable mentions. I lied. I said I wasn't going to trick you. Just real quick, I never had the perfect Hornets hat. I grew up such a big Hornets fan. I had like a ton of Hornets gear, but I had a black and green one. That's probably the closest. I may have had the all teal one too, but I never found like that perfect Hornets hat. I had an all purple Bucks hat too that I loved. I wore a lot, and then I actually have a hat that I got when I left the company where I worked with Scott. I did a lot of stuff with NFL Network, and they gave me like a care package when I was leaving, and they gave me an NFL Network trucker hat that's like blue with the NFL Network logo on it with a gray brim that I wear a ton too. That's kind of like my yard work hat, and that, like, I love that. It's super comfortable. Those trucker hats are the best. Like, they're so fucking comfortable. And then I also have one I got. It was kind of fitting. It was my father-in-law was sick. He had blood cancer, and we went to a Yankee game, and they actually were doing like a blood cancer awareness day, and they gave like a strikeout blood cancer Yankee hat, and I had given it to him, and he wore it, And then after he passed away, I took it back. And like, so I kind of wear that a lot in the AR too. Nice. So that's on the list. And then my number one is just the classic blue fitted Yankee hat. Like that's one I had always dreamed of having, but because of my glasses, fitted hats looked like shit on my head.
Oh, okay.
And when I got my LASIK surgery in 2011, I had said, the first thing I'm going to do is buy a fitted hat. So the day after I had my surgery, I had to go for my follow-up. We went, and then I went to the Providence Place Mall with my wife and Josh Richer, and we had lunch at Uno, and I went to Lids and bought my first ever perfectly fitted hat, not having to worry about glasses and everything else, and I got my blue, the standard Yankee hat that I still have to this day. So there you go.
Well done. Well done, sir.
All right, real quick, give me your post-match celebration, a recent moment of joy before we wrap up.
So I have an aunt who this year has lost her brother, her sister, and just this week lost a very close brother-in-law, just in a five-month span. Okay, and this is someone who, because of all this happening, mm-hmm. Looked very broken.
Right,
like didn't know how to deal with things. Like you could see she was a wreck, and she's getting up in age too, and so we're worried about her health. And today we went to empty her brother-in-law, my uncle's apartment, and we had left a bunch of because we had to bring stuff down to like the sidewalk and then go back up, and she stayed down there. But while she stayed down there, she set up this like a table and a chair, kind of like as though it was her house,
right?
Like, but as a joke, and she was joking with us and joking with people as they walked, and like, and really like, just being alive, like for the first time in a long time, and having fun despite the circumstance,
right?
And it was really beautiful, and it was awesome. It was this really wonderful moment of perseverance.
There you go. That was a great moment of joy. Mine would be my yearly St. Mary's extravaganza party. Every year, like, there are days within the week leading up where the weather just looks like it's going to be fucking terrible. And, I mean, I've had this party for 13 years, and every year somehow the window I get has, like, perfect weather. like the rain always comes, like, overnight after the party. It's crazy.
Right.
And so this year it was looking like real bad. They were saying rain starting at 5, 6, and it ended up not coming. And even at one point it was supposed to be 10, which I was like all in. I'm like, all right, I can take it. If my party goes from 4 to 10, we go inside or whatever. And the rain didn't come until like late, like 2, 3 in the morning. So we were outside with a core group after like, we probably have like 60, 70 people. But by like 9:30, it kind of dissipates, and we had a core group of like 10 or 11. And we sit outside just like the old days. I was playing beer pong. We had music on, eating, bullshitting. And we were out there till 1 in the morning. It was just like a great time. It was like a little round robin beer pong tournament, and just had a blast. So that was my moment of joy on the weekend. Just like kind of just hanging with a small group after the big party and just having this perfect weather. Because even when it's not raining on that weekend, it's like, 95, 100 degrees, like humidity. But this was like mid 70s, nice and cool. No bugs. It was just like the perfect, like just hanging outside late at night weather. So it was great. It was glorious. So it was another successful party, and then just like a great kind of late night end to it.
Awesome.
All right, let's wrap up. We talked a lot, but it was a lot of fun. We'll be back at some point in the near future. Like Aaron mentioned though, give us your suggestions for
anything.
Topics across the board. Top 5, pop culture, GWWE, wrestling. Other wrestling, whatever you want us to do. We'll get back to 97 for sure. We're going to do another live or, kind of watch a show like we did last week as well. We'll do that again soon.
If you challenge me to do something, I will also do it and tell you how it went.
Yeah, we'll do anything.
Yeah, pretty much.
Anything.
Yeah. Don't challenge me to cheat on my wife. I don't feel like doing that.
That's awesome.
I might do that. Depends here.
All right. When are we going to wrap up? That's Aaron. I'm JT. Check PlayStation.com each and every day. Vote in the tournament. Follow us on social media. All the shit. We'll be back soon. Goodbye. We love you.
Love you. I do feel invincible in that Cobra Commander mask. I could toss a salad.
Straight to you.